Coming up on Mac Break Weekly, Andy Anatko is here, Alex Lindsay is here, and of course the one and only Lori Gill is here. I don't know where Renee is, but he's not here this week. Just kidding. He's out and about. But we have so much to talk about with Apple's earnings. Lori dives deep into that. We talk a little bit about the housing crisis and how Apple may or may not be helping with that, as well as Apple's AirPods Pro. Yes, there's a lot to learn and a lot to love if you're Lori, who normally has issues with those fitting in. Plus, a little bit of a conversation about Apple TV Plus and so much more. Stay tuned.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 686, recorded November 5th, 2019. Everybody wants to kick a goose. This episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring isn't easy, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter, where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Try it for free at ziprecruiter.com/MacBreak. And by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again when you can have brilliant, hyper-fast, super simple Wi-Fi with Eero. Go to Eero.com/MacBreak and enter code MacBreak at checkout to get free overnight shipping with your order. And by ExpressVPN. Protect your online privacy with one click. Yep, it's that easy. For 3 extra months free with a 1-year package, go to ExpressVPN.com/MacBreak. Welcome back to MacBreak Weekly! I don't know why I wanted to go that long with it, but I decided to. I am Micah Sargent. Leo Laporte is on vacation right now. He will be back soon. Don't you worry. But until that time, I am here, and I am excited to introduce the managing editor of iMore.com. It's Lori Gill. Hello, Lori Gill.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. How is your arm? It is bee stingless, I hope.
Yes, I did manage. I just was saying I got coffee all over my MacBook Pro keyboard that I've had for 3 years in pristine condition. And I had a bee landed on my arm inside my house, by the way. And I instinctively shook my arm that was holding my coffee cup, and it just splattered everything all over my MacBook Pro keyboard. The keyboard or the MacBook Pro right now is working, but a lot of coffee got into that keyboard, so we'll see how that goes.
When you took up that beekeeping hobby, I really thought you meant like in your backyard. I don't know why you're doing that in your house. It's
so basically those butterfly switches are really jittery right now. Those are some really sticky. Freaked out butterflies.
Those are bee switches at this point. That voice you just heard is WGBH's Andy Anatko, or just Andy Anatko's Andy Anatko. How are you doing, Andy?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. It's like we're getting used to like rain and terrible stuff here in New England. But again, knowing that you're broadcasting from the West Coast, I'm not complaining at all. And hey, kudos to you for like, you know, putting your own stamp or, you know, stamperoni on the old podcast there. Say, you know, yeah. It's great. That's why we get new blood, because that's how, actually, if I'm not mistaken, this is also like the part of the plot of the morning show, the new Apple TV Plus. We've got like new blood comes in and she starts to put her own stamp on the show, and the current host starts to feel a little bit threatened. And I'd pay $5 a month to see like you and Leo go at it.
Oh, you know, that's what iOS today is. That's why it takes so long, and you're usually waiting for him to come to MacBreak Weekly, is because we have our little cage match after every episode. joining us also from Andy Anatko's undisclosed location, who was here with me last week, it is Alex Lindsay of Pixel Corps. Hello, Alex Lindsay.
I just appear and disappear all over the world. It's a complicated process.
Yeah, but we're glad you're here. You're back, and we are excited for the show today. Rene Ritchie is not joining us, but we love him and we will see him soon. Until that time, though, we'll need somebody here to make obscure references to movies and gangster rap. So I don't know which one of you wants to take that up, but we can figure that out as we go along.
Gee, when you throw it out there that we love him, it's almost as though like he went out for cigarettes and he hasn't been back like in 3 days. And you're like, Renee,
we love you, Renee. If come you're watching, back.
We love you. He went out for AirPods Pro and a pack of AirPods Pro, and he's just not been back since. Lori Gill, did you do the earnings transcript for Apple's earnings report?
I did. Thank you for your instructions so long ago in teaching me how to do it. I was able to get the transcriptions up, and yes.
Beautiful. Of course, yep. An original shout out to both Serenity Caldwell and Jason Snell. They also went out for AirPods Pro and haven't been back in a while. But we thank
What's
them.
What's happening?
What's going on? What's going on? We thank them for their help in that as well, and learning how to do these transcript calls right. But we've got $64 billion in revenue. And by golly, Apple saying services, 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 services over and over again in earnings reports. Clearly, there's something to that, because 20% of said revenue was to services. Someone want to explain to all of us what is included in services?
It's such a weird farrago. Yes, you would think that it includes things like iTunes, and it does. Yes, you would think it's iCloud, and it does. But it also includes things like $1 billion that Google pays to Apple for the benefit of having Google as the primary search engine. So as pie goes, it's a really complicated slice. It's not like wearables. It's not like Mac. It really is anything else that we can say that we don't actually that's made out of electrons. Or wiffle dust, as opposed to molecules, it becomes services.
So quite a bit of stuff. I mean, yes, it's not iPhone, and it's not those things. But we've got Apple just now launching TV Plus. We've got Apple Arcade. We've got all these different subscription services. Their iCloud storage solutions, and so there are quite a few regular, like, recurring money services that they provide. And then, of course, all the money they make off of Apple Pay, given that Apple's Apple Pay has become the highest. I can't remember exactly what the precise rating is, but essentially it's beat out Starbucks now as the highest rated tap to pay service. So, you know, it makes sense that Apple's
the most used tap to pay service.
Yeah.
There you go. The most used tap to pay service. Thank you, Karsten. And so it makes sense that they've got a lot of revenue coming from there. And to me, it seems as they've sort of put the writing on the wall through these different... I mean, back when I was transcribing the calls, they were saying services over and over again. As Lori has taken over that, they continue to say it. And so they've been putting their mouth where their money is, I guess, in trying to make sure that services does get to be a big wedge of the pie.
Yeah, it's also a good response to stockholders that are saying, well, yeah, you had your big hit with iPhone, but now you sold iPhones to everybody who's about to buy one. Where are you going to make your money from next? Ignoring the Apple Watch, ignoring everything else. And it really is, given that Google makes a lot of money on things they don't actually have to manufacture, ditto for Facebook, ditto for everyone who gets subpoenaed alongside Apple in the antitrust conversations that happen in Congress these days, it's really great to be able to develop a piece of software that generates your money, or write contracts for services and for content that generate your money, as opposed to having to have these 2 to 5 year old lead times and just guess that you're making the right piece of hardware.
Well, and also it's a very durable income. You know, people tend to move off of subscription services very slowly. So you don't have to worry about whether your next iPhone is a hit if you're able to make that work. And it doesn't have to be the whole basket of revenue. It's just the bigger it becomes, the more that Apple has this kind of base that is just going to keep on generating revenue.
Yeah, as opposed to coming up with $800 to buy a new iPhone versus you signed up for the 30-day free trial of something, and then maybe you don't love it, but you don't hate it enough to like say, please stop charging me $9 a month.
And a lot of the payment plans, I mean, it seems pretty clear Apple is kind of moving towards a payment, you know, like our phone becomes a subscription service. And when they convert that to subscription, then that piece of the pie gets really big. So anyway, it seems like moving everything towards kind of a payment where you just get to have whatever the newest version is would make a lot of sense.
Now, is that something that is this something that has been rumored? Is this something that we could very well see happening? Because I did see some conversations about, the iPhone sort of going. I mean, it already is, with the Apple Upgrade Program, a bit of a subscription plan in a way. But if I could get the latest AirPods Pro, although I will come back, don't you worry, on a subscription plan, I think that would be kind of nice. I could see some logic there. The Apple Watch too. That's one of the big things with the Apple Watch. People kind of gripe about, oh, I've got to upgrade this thing again. I just did it last year. It's supposed to, seems like it should last longer than that.
Yeah, well, if you're complaining that, oh God, I bought a $300-$500 watch last year, and now I'm gonna have to buy another. No, you don't. Your health plan will still be in effect. If you get sick, they will still treat you under your insurance plan, or rather, they will probably deny your coverage. But it won't be the first question will not be, did you buy a new iPhone this year? So it's, I mean, I'm probably going to be replacing my Pixel 1 sometime soon, particularly because Google finally cut this phone off from security updates. But the thing is, I year after year after year, I couldn't find a really good reason to replace it. These things, they last a long time. They work really well. And unless they're going to give you a feature that you, unless they're going to solve a problem for you, or there's a new feature that will create a new opportunity for you, it's on you if you feel a pressure to upgrade a device that is still working perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't feel the need to get a new watch as a good example, because the major features that were there, I was kind of like, eh, I don't really care. I think that that's a good example. But I do think that if you got to a point where there was a subscription plan that you can kind of decide what hardware comes with that subscription plan, I think a lot of people would over time, just make a payment, whether it's $40 a month or $60 a month or whatever it is. I think that there's a lot of people that would just prefer to make a monthly payment and then not have to think about it and just get the new thing rather than having to come up with that big chunk.
But then is Apple like morally liable for all of the e-waste that goes into the system, that now people are consuming new phones every single year?
They have little machines that are taking the thing apart and then grabbing the things and putting the things in. There was a video that was really good about that.
They could be creating jobs. Jobs have real people. Let's automate it. We'll have the robots do it. We don't have to pay them. We don't have to take care of their health.
I don't know. I think that
that's part of the reason why they're bastards. Even when they're putting all of their junk.
This is quickly becoming a skit.
And they're not even giving us a chance to get paid to sweep the bastards up.
Now, LG.
Revolution.
While that goes on. Yeah, while that goes on over there, I have to ask you, Lori. You moved off of some of the services, correct? Like you stopped, you're not doing Apple Arcade right now.
I canceled Apple Arcade, but not because I don't love it. And let me make sure that everyone's clear with that. I actually really enjoy it, but I do have a problem with video game consumption and the amount of time I have to consume video games. And right now I'm hyper-focused on games on Nintendo Switch. So I will go back to it. Probably in January or February, maybe. But for now, it's just it's temporarily canceled just because I don't want to be spending money on, I'm not playing the games. I'm playing my console games. So until I'm done playing my console games, I don't want to be spending the money for it every month. But I'm sure that I'm going to reinstate that in, a few months. So, I have all the services.
So, Lori, you have a monotheistic religious relationship with games.
Yes, like right now.
You pray to one God at once, yes.
One gaming God, yes. But I do have, I subscribe to News Plus, which I absolutely love. I love the magazines in News Plus, and you can come at me. I really think it's great. I love magazines, so it's a really great service for me. And Apple TV Plus, I'm on that service now, of course, for a year for free, but, we'll see. Maybe I'll keep it once a year is up. I started watching a couple of shows and I was into them. I like them.
We hear this.
They're not great, but they're good.
Oh, they're not great, but they're good. Well, we hear this term subscription fatigue. And I'm curious, if Apple is making a piece of its pie in a pretty good sizable chunk of its pie in services. Companies handle that subscription fatigue thing in different ways. And one of the ways that Apple seems to be doing it is like with the Apple TV Plus program, you can get it a year for free when you buy a new Apple product within certain devices. It also is bundled with the Apple Music student subscription. So you pay that one subscription, you get music and you get Apple TV Plus. When it comes to Apple Arcade, there was what is a month free. And so different companies out there kind of handling it by giving you a taste to see if it's something that you want to stick with, and then you choose to go afterward. But there are some services like Apple's storage solution that is a little bit more, I find that one to be a harder sell. When I'm talking to, you know, my family, my sister has a bajillion D photos on her phone and she only has the free storage plan. And I say, well, if you pay just, you know, a couple bucks a month, you'll have all
$2.99 a month.
$2.99 a month. You'll have all this iCloud storage, and then those photos that you want to keep will be up there, and then you don't have to worry about them being on your local device. That is the hardest sell, no matter who I'm talking to. I can't convince anyone, it seems, to pay for a monthly storage solution. Meanwhile, I'm over here with Dropbox and iCloud storage, and I probably pay for singing Amazon storage. I don't even know. Well, it was part of Amazon Prime. And I wonder about sort of where Apple is really focusing the attention of its services business in order to make sure that people do, like Alex was saying, you know, get into it and then they're it's frictionless enough that they don't really feel the need to step away from it. It feels a little bit more secure.
And the storage thing could be fixed in some ways by giving people 3 months of it for free, because once you started having all of your photos, you know, that's that whole, you know, like,
well, that's just mean, though. You know,
that is like that text. That's like Texan, or what was it? It was Texan or whatever, you know, the Saturday Night Live thing where they, you know, they have a little girl in a bed. Texan pays for my health insurance. And it's like, Texan, do what we say and no one gets hurt. And so once they get all your photos up there, I mean, like, for instance, Dropbox, I have terabytes on Dropbox, and I'm trying to get rid of it. Like, I'm trying to get rid of Dropbox to, or to at least lower it. And it's so hard to get it off, you know, like when you have terabytes, you know, it doesn't just easily, you know, it's so hard to download and it's very buggy. So it's like this constant challenge to get off of it. And so I think that's the problem with the storage, is people just haven't done it. I mean, I have the storage because it means that seamlessly all of my stuff is uploaded. You know, my photos are all up there, and I lose a phone, I'm like, you know, it's there, you know, very quickly, within a day or two, it was.
Yeah. And it's really easy to make money off of storage, because I don't think I've ever even really done the math on how much I'm spending on various different sources of online storage, because Google Photos does a really good job for my pictures, even the pictures I'm taking on an iPhone, right. Whereas iCloud storage does a really good job with like iWork stuff. So I'm paying a little bit and for system backups. I use Dropbox for your basic, I want one folder of stuff that I can access no matter where I want to go.
Right.
But I also have like a cloud backup solution, because that's the most transparent way to simply say, you see this this NAS server, I want this completely backed up someplace, right. That if this place catches on fire, the fire will probably not reach all the way to North Carolina
as someone who lives in Northern California most of the time,
did not mean to
yeah, but thinking about where your stuff is important.
Alex did reflect upon the fact that it is actually raining like really badly. I was like, oh wait, let's get an umbrella. Like, oh no. Like, I'm enjoying the rain.
I'm enjoying it. Yeah, it was very nice.
I miss rain.
It's coming. Don't worry. And when it shows up, it will be nonstop for.
I heard it's very cold
for about a day. Yeah,
it's chilling to the bone. Well, you know, the storage thing, going back to, you know, what you're talking about with Dropbox there, it does feel a little bit at times like they purposely make it a buggy system to make it difficult for you to get out of there. But there is a small part of me that does wish that they did offer a 3 month thing, because then I could show my sister, for example, see, this is how it works and this is how easy it is. And then suddenly that $3.99 or whatever it is, was it $2.99?
$2.99 for 200 gigs. And that includes the family sharing of it. So then it immediately becomes better for everyone if you're paying $3 a month for everyone in your family to share 200 gigs. And it, depending on how much storage you need, that's really not that much. And Mike, I think what you're talking about with people not wanting that service, it partly is because you can find a lot of free ways to use online storage. So people feel maybe a little resentful that Apple isn't also offering a lot of it for free. Mm-hmm. But they're not. There's all these things behind the screen that aren't being considered in why Apple isn't offering more than 5 gigs for free. honestly, I think they could probably up the amount that they offer for free to 10 or 15 gigs. I think that would just be a nice thing to do, especially with iCloud phone backups. They, you know, they take 2 or 3 gigs just by themselves. So it's not tangible. Like, you don't see the benefit of paying for, you know, $3 a month for cloud service. So you don't want it. You don't want to spend that extra money. You see the tangible benefits of $5 a month for unlimited access to games or exclusive TV shows or something. You are like receiving the benefits of that visually. But iCloud backups, people probably just tend to think, well, I don't need it. I'm fine without it. And I'm not realizing that there's so many things they could benefit from being able to back up, like photos specifically. If you're not backing up your photos somewhere and you lose them all, you're going to be scratching out your eyes, wishing that you had spent $3 a month for a backup service. But now it's too late. But you didn't think that at the time. You thought, I'm fine. And then now that you don't have it, then you're wishing for it. So it's harder to explain that to people.
The portability of being able to move all your files around all the time is addicting. You know, like me, I have this document. I have a folder on my iPad, my iPhone, my computers. It's called TransferDocs. So inside my iCloud, and anything I need to keep that I need to be able to access from anything, I just kind of throw files in there all the time. And then it's just the soup. I mean, I can AirDrop it or whatever, but it's just like this thing I'm working. Oh, I'm going to put it in there. I'm put it in there. And it's just instantly everywhere.
Yeah.
And you get used to that kind of interactivity, and it just, you know, beyond just the backup storage, you know, and when I first started pushing towards the cloud, I wouldn't let Keynote or Pages or whatever save into the cloud. I was like, oh, this is going to be a pain. Now I'm like, why did I save that to the desktop? It has to be in the cloud, because it's just like, oh, I can't figure out where that presentation is. Oh, I know that in the iCloud and Keynote, it's going to be sitting there, and I just go pull it down, and I'm off to the races. So
yeah, the my MacBook is finally ready. I've sent it off for that screen repair, like I said, a couple weeks ago. It's ready. It's been ready for like a day or two, but I haven't been able to come up, pick it up. Until then, I'm using like this Windows laptop, because the only laptop I have that's like powerful enough to do Skype. And it's like, I'm so like on edge, because I don't have Dropbox set up to it. And it's going to be such a deal to make sure that all the work I've been doing on this machine gets put back into the centralized truth that I rely on for all my other machines.
The centralized truth. let's go ahead and move on. Apple has moved up some senior executives. I can't remember what they were before, but senior directors, I think, is the term, to VPs. So we've got five new VPs. We've got a VP of hardware engineering, a VP of software engineering, VP of acoustics, and a VP of marketing. So some of those, you just put people in those positions because those positions need to be filled. But I find the VP of acoustics kind of cool. This person, Gary Gives, I guess would be the way that that's pronounced. We'll go with that. Sorry, Gary, if I've mispronounced your name. But Gary Gives, as the VP of acoustics, he ran the audio technology department for AirPods and the HomePod. So with AirPods being out there, AirPods Pro now being out there, and whatever comes next for HomePod, it makes sense to sort of have somebody in this VP role as this continues to move along. And then some folks, like this Bloomberg article talks about Borchers being a big spokesperson for the iPhone when it first came out, and even appeared in some videos explaining how to use the product. So, you know, I think sometimes we're looking for things to read between the lines with shakeups and move ups within the company. And there were some folks who've been, you know, moved out of the company, and these folks have moved in. But a VP is a pretty big position. And I think that I would argue that one thing it can show is if there's a VP role for a specific topic, then that's something that the company's paying close attention to. And so VP of acoustics with that role, we've got people really focusing on that.
It also plays a role in staff retention, that if people have certain goals when it comes to their careers, and they have vice presidential position on the org chart, is sort of like an affirmation that what they're doing is they're responsible for something really, really important. I'm not just an engineer who gets consulted every time that there's something that's supposed to make noise with an Apple logo on it. And also, we're talking about AirPods and stuff like that, but let's not overlook the fact that, damn it, like the audio on an iPhone is amazing. The audio on MacBooks is amazing. I mentioned again, I'm using it, and this is the Windows book I'm using is not a cheap one. This is a ThinkPad like X1 Carbon, which is probably positioned as the same sort of level as a MacBook, and love a lot of things about it. But my goodness, it sounds like a speaker coming out of a laptop, and I'm not used to my laptop speakers sounding like laptop speakers. I'm used to them sounding like really good little desktop speakers.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's one of those things that goes into every single thing that Apple does. It's not good enough to make it good enough. You have to really knock people back on their heels with how good the audio is from this weird little thing.
I agree. I'm always taken aback by how well the audio sounds coming out of whatever Apple device I am using. And I can't remember who we were talking to somebody about listening to audio through an iPhone. And I think it was my pal Ant Pruitt. So let me call him out here for a second. And he was sort of taken aback by the idea that people are listening through their phones, or that like maybe that we expected more from that experience. But I don't need to really expect more from that experience because it's pretty good for what it is. And I'm always impressed with that. Now, Laura, you were about to say something?
That we, us Apple users, where everything we own is in the Apple ecosystem, we tend to forget that there's other systems out there that maybe don't have as good quality of audio. So we just take for granted that it's good and just assume everything else is supposed to be as good as that until we try those other things and realize, oh, wow, the speakers on this monitor are terrible compared to the speakers on my MacBook Pro. What is that about?
What's that rattling and that echo? What's going on?
Yeah. Why does it sound like a tin can?
I guess that's paying attention to all the details, which is part of the reason that we spend probably too much money on all these devices. Let's move on to something that's rather, controversial, as it were. Apple has said that they are committing $2.5 billion to combat the housing crisis in California. This, of course, is a long and studied history of issues with the housing crisis in California. And Apple says, look, we've got a $2.5 billion plan that's going to help with housing availability and affordability. Folks on either side, there are folks who are celebrating this idea. This is great. Apple is paying attention and wants to help out. And then there are folks who say, well, if Apple paid all of the taxes that they are technically due, then the government would be able to use that money to help
And we just want to make sure that we're clear that Apple does pay all the taxes that is that are technically due.
Okay, you're right.
If Apple paid the taxes that they wanted to create, so that Apple would have to pay more, then Apple wouldn't be paying the taxes that are actually due. But you know, this argument that they're not paying, you know, the taxes that they're due, they are paying
That's a really good point. Yeah.
Yeah, and our tax system is completely messed up.
they're paying what's due in Ireland.
But sure, they're paid exactly what is currently due legally.
Correct.
You know, like, you know, and
using
and
every
all
possible
of us
loophole they can.
and okay, just want to. I'm not saying that they shouldn't pay more taxes. If they make a law that has them pay more taxes, I'm fine with that. But this idea, you know, that we as individuals, I pay someone to manage my taxes. His job is to make sure that I pay as few taxes as possible, but do it legally. You know, like I'm not trying to lift anything or turn anything inside out. I'm just like, just manage it, you know, and they'll be like, oh, well, you know, this is what you're due here and here. Now, I don't go any crazy structuring or anything else. But the point is that if generally as people have more resources, they tend to spend more of a fraction of those resources to make sure that they don't have to give up more than they have to. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what all these corporations are doing, or what is what all of us do, to make it like, oh, it's the big corporation. If you were making that money, you'd figure that out too. You know, there's no guarantee that sending it to the government is going to make it any better.
But the difference is that I don't have either the money or the pull to hire legislators to create a tax system that benefits me so well. I would love to create a tax system in which people who are freelance journalists without children get to get negative taxes. And if I could afford to like put $40 million a year into lobbying efforts, that's what I would do. So yeah, you are right. It's not as though they're cheating anybody out of what doing something illegal, but they have access to the ability to not only legislate a beneficial position for themselves and for their industries and their income brackets, but also to they can basically hire the sort of firepower that can actually prepare a document that is as complicated as the double Dutch window pane doorknob of Istanbul or whatever they're calling whatever the latest the tax loophole trick is. So that's – I mean this is a great time for like large corporations to be held accountable. And for – I think that a lot of people who are not named Bernie are sort of realizing that, wait a minute. It's okay. Why are we basically saying, oh, isn't Apple really incredible for putting this $2 billion? Isn't Google wonderful for putting all this money into housing? Like, they created that problem by driving prices up
Sometimes I think that
of course the local government was also not solving the problem.
I'm not saying that they shouldn't pay more taxes. It's become like a little bit of an irritant for me because, right. Because the thing is that it is, there's other things that, you know, okay. So I believe, and I may not be accurate, but I'm pretty sure that Apple is actually one of the largest taxpayers in the country, you know, possibly in the world, you know, like, so when we say that they're not paying, you know, their fair share, they are paying a lot of taxes. No, those are sales taxes. Those are payroll taxes. So it's not, you know, there is one. So out of all the taxes that are paid, there's this one sliver that they're not paying. They're paying all these other taxes in all these other municipalities. All of their employees are paying all these taxes in all these municipalities. You know, there is an enormous amount of money being generated for those governments, you know, whether it's, you know, through the employee taxes that are paid, through the payroll taxes that are paid, through the sales taxes that are paid. Those are all enormous amounts of money that are being spread out into the government, you know, and so we focus on this one little section that they're not paying, you know, and you know, and that's the thing that, you know, so it's I don't know what the percentage is, although now I'm curious and I'll go find out. Yeah. Maybe someone in the chat room will figure out what the percentage is. Yeah. But the point is that there's already billions going out. You know, it's not so it's, you know, they are, you know, and I've seen, you know, back and forths with large corporations in areas, and the corporations then move out, and it's, you know, they just move to another location because the municipality made it so difficult for them to work, you know, because they wanted all the extra stuff from them. And they said, okay, now we're going
to
move.
Like those poor L.A. Raiders. They had to go to Los Angeles.
No, I'm not going to get into what company I worked for that did that. But they moved. And in that location, it was, you know, what they weren't really calculating was all of the business that was done by all those employees and all of the taxes that were done by those employees and all of the, you know, like, you know, and when that all left, you know, that location sucked in,
yeah.
You know, and so I think we need to look at the benefit that, you know, it's easy. It's a good it's good politics to talk about corporate taxes, but it's not taking into account the overall benefit, you know, as we start to attack. I mean, the thing that I get concerned about is when we start to attack American companies that have gotten really big, you know, we can look at things like TikTok. You know, which, okay. You know, which is not an American company, not going to be bought by an American company, and will be, you know, is growing in the interest level that we have. And I think that we just need to be careful of breaking up all these companies or pressing down on them really hard, because, you know, we are in a, as Americans, we are in a beneficial position at the moment.
Yeah.
That may not last forever.
But this, we can't overstate how important this crisis is, because I really do think that in the Bay Area, you're creating a situation of housing shortages and housing unavailability, that causes an entire society to break down.
It's probably a whole different podcast.
Well, okay. No. Yeah, but
I'm happy to keep talking about it. I'm giving Mike a moment there.
No, Bob,
the free Schweppes that I was going to give you.
Oh, yeah, you're out now.
All I was going to say is that I hope I'm not distracting from like the big conversation where when you get into a situation where school teachers can't afford to live anywhere near the communities of the children they serve, when first responders can't afford to live anywhere near the communities they respond to, again, people who provide important daily services to the community, they can't afford to live in the communities they serve. That's what causes whatever unique social civilization you have in that area to suddenly dissolve, because it just doesn't work anymore. And so that's why we're grateful for any solution that people come up with.
We aren't grateful though. I'm in Northern California, and I see these people argue.
So, I'm a big ball of gratitude.
If I want to put a shack behind my house, it's going to cost me $50,000 in licensing with the city to do that. And the thing is that you know, I have neighbors who don't want anything to change because they don't want to increase the density of where we live. And so you have a lot of, you know, it's not just the corporations that are adding more people. We have to understand that the building rules and the
local government as well.
You know, rent control, as popular as it is proven to be something that depresses investment in real estate. And so, you know, so rent control, building, you know, codes that require, you know, incredible somersaults to produce, in addition to the fact that there's a strong demand of people that want to live there. You know,
at the same time, you have to have enough regulation that can compete with these wonderful disruptions that people are trying to create. Where, like, if I were to buy this building, and like decided that I'm gonna like rent out I really believe that there should be more like apartments for people who are creative people who are self-employed. I would spend so much money on developing that lease to make sure that you cannot Airbnb anything for any reason. And if someone is if my town is going to be erecting affordable housing, I'm not going to have these units being bought up by people who they're going to turn into like their own little hotels. You have to make sure that the people, this is for people who make families that have children and who collectively make less than $50,000 a year. You have to make sure that these are going to those places. So you have to have certain regulation.
These companies don't want to, regardless of what they say, they don't want to stay in the Bay Area. They're just there because they can't figure it out.
They can't figure out how to get the engines on the spaceship campus.
No. Just how to move out of Silicon Valley. I mean, you look at the experiments that they're doing in other parts of the country, in other parts of the world. They are, you know, there has been, you know, a word bandied about called terraforming, which is, you know, that is, they want to get out. They want clean slates. You know, now I don't know if Apple wants that, but I can tell you that other companies want clean slates. They want to figure out how to move large portions of the, or at least not keep on expanding where the, you know, so if Silicon Valley has this issue right now, is it going to be a issue forever? Probably not. There's a whole, you know, there's billions of dollars being spent right now trying to figure out, you know, how to build something from scratch. You know, like, you know, and because the cities are completely, part of the problem is the cities themselves, is mm-hmm. that you can't modernize them. You can't increase density. The density coefficient, when cut up into little squares that make it available for cars, makes the cities a disaster. You know, we need to think about cities that don't have any cars so that you can design things around, you know, very high density, you know, and that are, you know, information age, you know, cities that allow that. And that's going to help change a lot of those things, you know, but you can't really fix the cities that are here now. Sorry. Like, they're cute, but they're never going to work.
If you get rid of the humans first, starting with the Americans.
No, you get rid of the cars first.
Cars go first. You can no longer drive a car on Market Street in San Francisco.
This is true.
So they're, well, but the governments are trying.
The first step is getting rid of the cars. The second step is building over the streets.
Is building over the humans. Not
over the humans. Humans are fine, but you need to give them more places to go. You know, 70% of LA is cars. Mm. Like literally 70% of all of the square footage in LA is dedicated to cars.
I just saw a video last night. I think it was an ABC News video. Oh, goodness. Let's see if I can find it. And we'll see if I can actually play it, but I hope so. L.A. street car. And it was this hilarious, well, it wasn't hilarious, but it was funny watching this music is playing in the background and it's all mystical and sort of sweet. And it's just them zooming out on LA and showing how there are 9 lanes in traffic. Well, six lanes of traffic on either side. And it's just so stuffed. I wish I could remember where I saw that. But anyway, so it was just like a slow zoom out.
We're going to get a lot of comments on this one going.
Listen.
Like, we started off talking about Apple, and then we got into city.
Here's the thing.
City planning.
I'm going to be taking a break. I'm going to be taking a break here.
I will admit that city planning is something I think about almost every day for the last 30 years. So it's not something that I'm not paying attention to. It's just that's but I've just concluded that it's all broken.
I must not have the forcefulness of Leo Laporte. We will be taking a break here shortly, but I do want to point. There it goes. But I do want
just,
to say.
I was just saying that, like, now, see, you got to play a zone defense now. You used to be able to play like a man to man defense because now we got like 2 people in one studio, and the rest of you are just like loners.
That's what outliers. It is.
So technically, you know, I just want to point out that
I gave you an out. I said, okay,
you did.
We're about to go off, and then you said, go ahead, and I was like,
no, because this is what I want. That is exactly what I want to note. I think that one of the things that gets a little frustrating is the idea that folks who are, you know, here with our thoughts and opinions, it is our whole vocation to be sharing these things, should not share every aspect of that. And a podcast that's about Apple stuff, when we're having a conversation about Apple providing for the housing crisis, then you have to have a conversation about the housing crisis and everything that involves. And to put forth the idea that, oh, they're not talking about, you know, computers and phones at this time, I think does not do justice to the conversation that we're having. So I am happy and glad to let you talk about that, because I think in the end we got to a really good point, Alex Lindsay, that you were talking about with city planning and how, I mean, if we care about this company, Apple, and the products that they make, and we care about what they're going to do in the future, then we have to care about where they're going to go in the future and who's going to be able to work there in the future and what that means. And if it means finding a place that is less or more density and less cars, then that, by golly, that's what we're talking about. So I am happy to let the conversation go on.
And by the way, I wouldn't claim that I have any sort of answer. My only thing with both the taxes and the city planning is that it is far more complicated than just saying we should tax them more or they should do this. There are 1,000 things. It's the same thing with our, you know, the fires and the power outages in Northern California. There's so much blame to go around. I think that it's just that nothing's ever that clear.
But can I say this is quite an about face for Apple, because remember when Steve Jobs went before
Steve Jobs would never do this.
Well, yeah. I'm saying we know this because remember when he went before the city council when they were getting the permits for the spaceship campus, and one of the city councilors said very timidly, so in addition to all the construction you're doing, CEO Steve Jobs, sir, would you consider like maybe building like, I don't know, like a Wi-Fi infrastructure for the rest of the city, sir, which would be cool, but you know. And he said, what did he say? He said that our thoughts on that subject is that we pay you guys an immense amount of taxes, and then you guys can take that money and build what you want with it.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I remember watching that.
So we're not getting a bike path. Okay, fine.
Yeah, I remember watching that court room or whatever, wherever it was. Yeah, the city council meeting.
I do think that the only thing I'll say about the Bernie Sanders thing with the Apple building is that when corporations do this, I mean, it's fine. You would probably get more of it if we didn't whack them on the head every time they said they're going to do something new. You know, that's you know, like yeah. If we just said that's great and he can keep on going, we can keep on figuring it, you know, figuring out other ways to tax them or do whatever you want. But it would be nice to encourage them to do it, not say, hey, we're going to do something, and then immediately use it as a way to whack them on the head. Is not a way to get more corporations to make that work.
So you're specifically talking about Bernie Sanders there, as opposed to, because I don't think that Apple, there was a conversation recently about, I don't remember what it was that Apple did, but it was a technology decision. And somebody, I had said something about it in the idea that why doesn't Apple, I wish Apple would do this, sort of talking about my own experience for what I wanted Apple to do with, I think it was the iPhone, having the newest iPhone having a USB-C port instead of a Lightning port. And someone said, because of the blowback they would get if they made that decision. And does Apple really give a care what people are saying on Twitter as a company?
They have courage is what they have.
Does Apple really care about that? Or are you specifically talking about the Bernie Sanders who can actually, you know, influence policy and things like that? Is it because it was him saying that that it matters?
I think that all companies pay attention to it.
To Twitter to Bernie?
To all of it. To all of it. There's whole teams that are paying attention to what everybody else is saying about them. That's part of being a big corporation.
Well, paying attention versus...
they pay a lot of attention.
Paying attention versus I've made this decision and there. I mean, the removing the headphone jack got a lot of blowback. They still did that, and then they continued, you know, down the path of creating wireless.
I'm not saying that they don't make all their decisions based on that. I mean, any corporation. I'm not saying Apple, but I'm just saying that there's a lot of meetings about everything. and there's everything's a calculation, you know, and everything is a, you know, and so for any corporation, any company, I mean, when we're doing stuff, we think about, you know, how it's going to look. Everything you do, you think about. If you're not thinking about that, then you're eventually going to get bit. So I think that all corporations think about those things. And so when you create someone like Bernie Sanders creates an environment that makes it, you know, less interesting to do that, you know, like, you know, like, and, you know, and it's fine. It's just silly.
He can be
silly.
Don't interrupt me when I'm right next to you. I can go like this.
But, oh my goodness!
All I was gonna say is that, like, my only really big problem with Bernie is that he can come across as genuinely cranky, as opposed to here's a problem, here's how we solve it. And so this is why when it can be expected that when he says that, oh, how dare Apple give $2.5 billion when they shouldn't be, like, again, let's look at the terms of, like, what they're doing. Let's also accept that they don't have to do this. They're doing this voluntarily. We can have a long, complicated debate, but maybe we can wait 4 days before we start. Right. You know, wait till you get to the next, like, fried chicken breakfast, a baked chicken breakfast or whatever, or prayer pancake, whatever thing you're doing as a candidate. Right. So, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that.
When we come back from the break, we're going to have a long conversation with Lori Gill.
I only did it because I thought people would laugh at you.
Until that time, I want to tell you about ZipRecruiter. We're bringing you this week's episode of Mac Break Weekly. Thank you, Karsten. Hiring can be a slow process. In fact, Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. But he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. Then he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He used the candidate rating feature in ZipRecruiter to filter his applicants and was able to focus on the most relevant ones. And that is how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So I wouldn't even know where to start on finding a director of coffee. And Dylan Miskowitz was able to not only find that director of coffee in 2 days, or in just a few days, but also to filter the candidates out so that just the right person could be given that job. And this idea that ZipRecruiter goes and says, you know what, it's not about you sort of having to put your thing out there and hope that the folks out there are going to find your job listing and apply for it. No, ZipRecruiter invites them to apply for your job. So it finds the good people that it wants, that you're looking for, and says, hey, we've got something here for you, and helps you get the candidate that you would like to interview. You can see why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes by going to ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. So try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. ZipRecruiter.com/MacBreak. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Thank you so much, ZipRecruiter. If you're looking for somebody to be your director of coffee or whatever it happens to be, then you've got to check out ZipRecruiter. All right. AirPods Pro. Let's go ahead and we're going to move away from some of those other topics. I'm curious, Lori Gill, when the AirPods first came out, you and I were having a conversation and you said to me, how do they feel for you? I had mentioned that I was watching like several episodes of The Office, I think it was. And I had said, you know, they don't hurt my ears. I kind of have had them in for a few hours as I'm watching The Office and they aren't giving me any pain. However, for you, the first and second generation of AirPods did kind of give you some pain issues. Have you had the opportunity to try the new AirPods Pro? Oh, Snapsky.
Look at that.
They're in her ears.
Let me tell you, Micah, I mean, I'm so excited to talk about this. I've loved the idea of AirPods since they came out, and they've been a fresh source of frustration for me because of the pain they bring. I get about a half an hour's worth of use before I start to feel a little bit of an ache in my ear. And then after about an hour's use, it really starts to like really hurt. And I'm pulling them out and putting them back in and, you know, kind of messing with my ears to give them a little bit of safe softness. By 2 hours, I have head fatigue. I start to feel, you know, pressure all over my whole head, and not quite a headache, but it's just more like head fatigue. So I pop in AirPods Pro, honestly thinking it's probably still going to be just as uncomfortable. I have multiple times worn these for the 4.5 hours that you can get out of battery life straight. No pain, no problem whatsoever. It's the best feeling in the world. I love AirPods Pro so much.
Yay. What size ear tips are you using? Or is that too
personal?
I'm
using the small ear tips, and they come with the default ear tips. Mm-hmm. I popped those in and it said, this is a good seal. This is a good fit, or good seal. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I doubt that. So I went, I switched over to the smaller tips, the size small, put those in, and it said the same thing, that this is a good fit too. So anybody who is about to get AirPods Pro, or, you know, or even if you have them in your ears right now and you used the size that Apple says is a good seal, that doesn't mean that it's a comfortable fit, right? Because all it's telling you is that with that particular tip in your ear, the seal is tight for active noise canceling. Mm-hmm. You might find a larger or smaller ear tip is more comfortable for you. So test out all three of them and figure out which one feels comfortable and has the right seal to it. The comfort level is absolutely extraordinary. And I had this amazing experience yesterday. I've been testing. I've got my review halfway done. It should be done today and up on iMore by tomorrow at the latest. I was outside while somebody was using a leaf blower, and they're basically like one of the loudest pollutants for the size of a machine that they are. Right.
Yeah. Right. It's so small, like, and yet it's
environmental
like,
pollutants. Right. They're really loud. I was about 12 feet away from a leaf blower. I even looked at the my Apple Watch to check the noise app, and yes, it was at it was around 77. It sometimes hit 80, so it was loud. The environment outside was loud. It sounded, I was standing that close, and it sounded more like I was inside a house with all of the doors shut, and in a room with the doors shut. And the leaf blower was across the street. It was barely audible. I could tell that it was there. I didn't have to turn up my music that I was listening to. I could still hear my music just fine, even though the leaf blower was about 12 feet away from me. It was incredible how well these tiny little things were canceling out that loud noise.
That's awesome. I suggest that folks start with the smallest ear tip, even though it comes with the medium. Put the smallest ear tip in your click them onto the AirPods, and then try those out first and see if the seal is good. And then if the thing says no, then go up from there. So starting at the smallest and working your way up is probably better than if you start at the medium size, and because you've squished it into your ear canal, it's going to have that fit. I have had a similar experience. I have not had too much of an issue with the pain in the past. But as far as it goes, I've been very impressed. I've used Amazon's new Echo Buds and had those since, I think, Monday or Tuesday of the week that AirPods Pro came out, and the Bose noise cancellation is pretty good, but in comparison to Apple's ANC, I've been genuinely impressed. And I think part of it, honestly, is the way that Apple like ramps up the ANC. It's almost like someone's blowing a bubble around you, and then suddenly the bubble surrounds you, and it's like this whoosh, and then you can't hear the stuff that's out. So I've been really enjoying them, and I've been using them with the transparency feature as well whenever I'm in environments. In fact, I was using them this morning while I was getting ready for iOS today, and I was able to still hear everything but listen to music at the same time, and that was quite nice. I've seen generally good reviews of AirPods Pro, and I'm curious, gentlemen, have either of you tried them out yet? Are you using them? Are you interested?
I haven't tried them yet because my uses are multi-platform enough that I feel as though I have to wait until spring to see what other $250 earbuds I can get that might work as well for my uses. So I haven't tried them yet. I'm really curious to see, like Mike and Lori, like how essential is it to get a really good fit on those ear tips, not just so that they're comfortable, but so that the active noise cancellation really works well? Like, are you worried about it? Like, if they're a little too small, do you have enough leakage that whatever it's doing to try to figure out what's going on outside versus inside the ear doesn't work very well? Or
the tips have a really great design to them. I'll try to show you. I'll show you my disgusting ear tips. Let's see if I can do this. It might be too. Got this very wide fit to it. It's not one of those double tiered ones or anything. It's got a nice wide tip. So, you know, even size small ear tip, it's likely that it will create that seal in anyone's ear because it's designed to kind of, you know,
expand,
push itself out without being painful. It's designed to push itself out and give you that seal. I've never had to fiddle or, you know, maneuver it or anything to make sure that the seal is there. It just happens. As soon as I put them in my ear, I get the official seal. In fact, just now taking that out of my ear, the ambient noise in the air sounded weirdly loud to me in my ear that was just naturally listening to sound. It suddenly was like, wow, there's a lot of like fan noise out here that I never noticed before. Because that seal, it just kind of takes away all that kind of like, you know, the noise of your computer and all that kind of stuff. It just takes away all of that. So
I want to be back in the impressive Matrix. Send me back to the Matrix.
And Andy, speaking to that question as well, I've used Bose Quiet Comfort in-ear earbuds for airplane rides and things like that for a while. And it's a similar kind of fit where it's almost less about creating that perfect in-ear monitor seal and more about getting a good enough like lock in your ear that when the ANC is active, right, so I would say the seal is
inside
not
outside.
Yeah, exactly. It's not so important that if you jostled the ear pod or the AirPod, that then suddenly, you know, the ANC feature would, you know, wouldn't work as well. I've found it to be, I can just sort of pop them in. I don't have to think too much about how I push them in, and it still does a good job of keeping that sound out. So, yeah, I don't think that it needs to be an exactly perfect fit for it to work, which is one of the reasons that I think I've been so impressed with it. Going back to the Echo Buds really quick, just sort of as a comparison there, there are a lot more fit options with the Echo Buds. And I'm seeing some people in the chat who are talking about how they their left AirPod Pro was not they could not get it to fit for them, and so they ended up having to send them back. And it worked for the right one, but the left one didn't, because you don't necessarily have symmetrical ear canals. And I hope that, I was just thinking about this yesterday, I hope that Comply, which makes all sorts of materials of custom ear tips for all sorts of in-ear headphones and whatnot, I hope they're working on a pair for AirPods Pro, or, you know, multiple designs, because they've got like the sweat proof design, they've got the comfort design, and I can't remember what the other ones are, because I really do like Comply ear tips. And I think that for some folks who need to have multiple sizes, that would be good. One of the things that I want to sort of celebrate Apple on, in fact, Rene, whenever he first got his hands on these AirPods Pro, he sort of called me out on Twitter, because he knows how grossed out I am by earwax and that whole thing. I'm happy that my body produces earwax and it helps with my, like, it does what it's supposed to do. I'm happy that it does what it's supposed to do, but it grosses me out. And so he was saying specifically to me, let me know that Apple said that you can get some replacement tips for very little money. But aside from the fact that you can get replacement tips, what Apple has done this time that I think is so great is the tips of the device, you know, the things that you can take off and replace, they have what is essentially what they call in other headphone tips, an earwax blocker or earwax grid or
gutters.
Exactly. It has gutters. And so you don't end up clogging the actual speaker in the actual AirPod like you would with the last generation models with earwax. Instead, it goes into the tip. Yeah. See, so Lori's holding up right now the speaker, and that is completely covered by a wax guard when you click the headphone tip on. And I think that's great. That's going to make them easier. It's going to mean that you're going to have less replacements and you're not going to have so many issues with them, going bad. Or in my case, so I wanted to run an experiment. I have accidentally washed my AirPods in the past, not the AirPods Pro, but my AirPods, and they were fine afterward. Well, for the longest time, the AirPods that I have, one of them, I've talked about this before, but one of them completely didn't put out any sound, and the other one put out sound at about 50% of its normal volume. And so since I got AirPods Pro, and the only other thing I could have done was thrown away the AirPods, I decided to take the AirPods out of the case, put them into a Delicates laundry bag, zip it up, and put them in with my wash and see what would happen. I washed them and took them out, let them dry, and I put them in my ears, and the one that was at 60% volume was up to about 90% volume, and the one that I haven't been able to hear out of for months actually was putting out sound. So it was genuinely earwax and dust, and this, I'm going to get sick, grossed out here, but it was genuinely all of those things that were causing the issue with me being able to hear sound out of it. So that is part of the reason why these things are so horribly, you know, the longevity of them is such an issue, is because we are humans who produce different types of fluids that end up fluids and materials that end up clogging up these speaker grills. So I'm happy that Apple's working on that, or has changed up that process a little bit. I was curious if anyone had any other thoughts on that, because that is a perfect segue into this excellent CBS news report. It says people love AirPods so much, they spend more than $500 million a year replacing them. $700 million a year go to replacement AirPods and cases. That's about 5 to 7% of AirPods sales.
Suddenly doesn't seem that generous to have $2.5 billion to spend on housing, does it? I got that on me now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that the hard part, you know, my wife spent a long time, a couple of years, resisting every time she was having trouble with her headphones, I was like, you know, the AirPods would make that better. You know, like there was a little like I was like, I'm not going to fix that, because I told you how to fix it, and I'm now going to just wait for you to give up. And she finally gave up.
Down. That's how you got her to marry you.
Yeah, it did. It took me 5 years. Anyways, I'm good at what we call the little hammer. So anyway, so you watch Shawshank Redemption. It's like the little hammer. So anyway, so that's my whole life. Anyway, so she finally got the AirPods, and now she's constantly telling me, this is amazing. Like, they're just so much better. And I was just like, the key is not to rub it in.
Right. Just yeah. Go, you don't, I great, told honey. You so. Yeah. You just, yeah, celebrate.
No, they're just like, no, I'm really glad you're enjoying it. And she loves them. And I think that's the problem is that they're so, at what Apple figured out how to do is just get all the pieces to work. You know, it's very easy to put them back in their charger. It's very easy to have them charged. It's very easy to put them in. It's very, you can tell which side to put it in first, and there's not. But it's all of those little things that I have literally 8 or 10 Bluetooth headphones as I've worked through this process of being so dedicated to a set of headphones that would work. And now, you know, having the AirPods, the thing is that Apple just figured out how to make it easy. I can fit it in my pocket. It's, you know, just the rounded corners that slide right into your pocket and slide back out. The fact that when I open it up, I know which iPod, you know, which head earpiece goes where, and they just pop in and they snap in. And you don't, you know, there's all these little things that make it work.
And even the simple things where they understand that I've been waiting in line at the grocery store and now I'm at the head of the lines. I'm going to pull out one earpod. So, that means I should pause the playback because he wants to have an interaction with another human being until you put it back in the case, which is, it's not just a temporary interaction. He really just wants to hear out of one ear for the next. Okay. Again, it's those little things that when you spend, we've all talked about how much these things cost, but it's less about being cheap and more about being frugal. It's if you spend $250, $260 for a pair of earbuds, you want the experience that Apple will give you, where they did not screw up anything. That
I mean, my biggest complaint, which is fixed in the Pro, is that I haven't gotten yet. I went last night to get them, and there was an Apple store right next to my hotel, and so when I got to Boston, and I was like, I'll just go in and get some, and they didn't have them. So,
we have a local Apple store, Alex. We have time. There are lots of restaurants near it.
I think we should go
check. Bibimbap at the Korean place nearby.
There we go. That sounds perfect. Yeah. So I think that the one thing they fixed was that when I'm still on a plane, I don't use my AirPods. Not because of the time, but because I can't hear what's going on. So I still have my Edemotics that I use for planes, and I still have a wire, and I connect it, and it feels like a truck, you know, like chonk chonk, this wired thing. But and I have my little converter. I have my converter for Lightning and my converter for USB-C, so I think that they fixed that. The one thing that was really problematic for me. Well, and for longer flights, battery will become a problem, but it's okay.
Well, then you just have two pairs, and you can switch out.
Yes.
I try not to admit that I might have two pairs.
My day pair and my night pair.
I think I have three pairs, so don't worry.
Yeah, my goodness. Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was going to say that I have an empty iPod case, AirPods case charger.
Yeah.
Pair of AirPods?
No, I did. I swear I haven't lost them. I'm just saying that, you know how like you go to the nightstand or the dresser, say, okay, great, I'll need my AirPods, and you flick them open and they're not in there, and you know that they're somewhere in the house, but now they could be anywhere in the house, and so now I may as well just buy a new pair because
I've never experienced that.
And that's why I have two.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if with the regular AirPods, they weren't good enough, or they hurt too much for me to wear them regularly. So if I'd have lost one, I would just been like, oops, I guess I lost one. But with AirPods Pro, if I lost one AirPod, if I lost both AirPods, if I lost the case, I would replace it. So I would be part of that $700 million a year because it's the usability of them is so fantastic that it's worth it to me to spend some money instead of just replacing them entirely. At some point, you're getting so close to replacing them entirely that you might as well buy the whole thing. But an individual bud or just the case as a replacement because of something you lost, I definitely would do that with AirPods Pro.
Speaking of, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the 0 out of 10 repairability score on AirPods Pro. I'm not surprised. I don't think anyone is surprised. That these
these fancy lads are not very repairable.
When it comes to iPhone repairability, I do think that Apple needs to work harder to make them more repairable. I do think that we have, you know, the right to repair our iPhones. With something as small as AirPods, I never even really thought about the idea of repairing them yourself. I mean, they're so small. So a 0 out of 10 score does not surprise me. And it also doesn't bother me because there are just certain things that are never meant to be repaired at home. And, you know, Alex, you might actually have a different opinion on this sort of like DIY kind of thing. And is that a big deal that you can't repair your AirPods? They're so small.
No, but it's not a big deal for me that I can't repair my iPhone either. You know, I think people underestimate I do a lot of things that I like to work on, but I also think people underestimate the complexity of putting the amount of power that we have in a little phone, or AirPods or our phone, to get that much into it. As you start to make things modular in a way that you could take them apart and put them back together and that they'd work again, that's very hard, you know. And we're already packing an enormous amount of silicon and other things into these little spaces. I think that the idea that we're going to now make it so that there's screws and there's things and there's ways to pop it on and put it back in, a lot of the stuff is surface mounted and put in, done in a clean room. And, you know, there's so much stuff there that I just think that I look at it like, well, that's the, I don't know. I mean, being able to recycle it, I think, is important.
Yeah.
You know, I think that if it doesn't work, being able to send it back, and they have little machines that do that. And you know, as Andy pointed out, not people.
But right to repair is usually not so much about me individually being able to repair it. It's usually more about, well, Apple, you're going to allow third parties to do third party repairs, and you're not going to.
I would never. And I think my problem is that I'm sure that I guess we can talk about the right. I would never let a third party touch my phone. Like,
let's say
I don't even buy a third party, let alone let them actually touch it. My wife touch my phone.
I want you to form a picture in your mind of a freelance journalist in a rapidly collapsing market. You can do so by turning roughly this way. And imagine that, this individual spent $270 for a pair of headphones, and you find out that they're dead in 2 years, but because of a battery that, according to the teardown, doesn't look like a custom battery. It looks like something you could actually source somewhere. And imagine him trying to picture himself spending $270 to buy an entirely new pair versus going to some kiosk or going to some provider via mail that will send you back a working pair that'll fix your AirPods for $60. And I can't remember the dude's name, but he's got a YouTube channel, and his most popular video was there's an engineer, I think he was living in Shenzhen for a while, and so he got this idea of how difficult would it be for me to build my own iPhone, because in the Shenzhen market you can find secondhand parts. And the great things about these videos is that, like, he did another video of, well, I've got a 16 gigabyte iPhone. How can I upgrade to 256 gigabytes? And so he found out, okay, here's where I buy like the right chip. And then, okay, well, I need a special, like, I can desolder it with this special tool from this market, but I need this template in order to put the solder balls back on correctly, and someone will sell you, like, the template for this. And the point being made is that here's somebody who is very, very clever, but he was able to self-teach himself and acquire the tools to do something as complicated as swapping the memory capacity of a working phone. So that's not something that I would like to do. But again, if I've put a lot of money into a pair of headphones, if someone wants to figure out how to perform that repair, I'd be more than happy to send out an unauthorized repair and have these fixed for $80 instead of having to buy a brand new pair, which is not only just the cost, but it's also, again, kind of galling that it's just a battery, and batteries, like, we've killed entire segments of the environment. We've built so many batteries. One of these batteries should be able to repower these headphones. So that's what I'm talking about. It's like, it's not about me trying to fix things. It's about making sure that if someone wants to build a business out of that and wants to acquire the tools for it, that there's not going to, at the very least, it's not going to be anything artificial, like, I don't know, a special app that has to sign off on the validity of a battery or the validity of a screen before before it'll actually render the phone operational again.
Yeah.
Mixed opinions with the screen thing, because with the screen thing, it's also about the fingerprint sensor there. And when it comes to that, I want to make sure that my security is. But I agree with your base point. When it is something as simple as a battery, in fact, not too long ago, I had replaced. I have like an old school Kindle. It's a Kindle keyboard, the first model I think that had the keyboard, and got it for Christmas one year as a young youth, and I loved that thing so much, and I sourced the battery whenever it went out the first time and was able to repair it myself. But now they don't make the battery anymore. I can't find it anywhere. And so now it's just this piece of plastic and whatever else that thing is made of, Etch-a-Sketch. And it makes me very sad that I can't repair it. So making those things available to us, I agree with you. I think that finding that happy medium is important.
I have a bunch of non off-brand Canon batteries that worked fine when they worked with a still phone, but with my still camera, but when I use them for my Blackmagic camera, for instance, they halfway through they just decide not to work anymore. and I asked Blackmagic. Well, the first thing I called Blackmagic and I was like, okay, my camera keeps on turning off in the middle. Like it says it's full and then it's just empty. And he goes, are you using a Canon branded battery? And I'm like, no. And he's like, and I said, are you checking for it? He goes, no, we're not checking for it. It's just the cheap batteries get driven really hard and they're not as good as the Canon batteries. And so now I have all these batteries that I bought, much less than the Canon batteries. And now I have to go back and rebuy them because they're not as good.
They also could be counterfeit. I had a counterfeit battery for my Olympus that I didn't figure out because it looks absolutely identical in every way, shape, or form to the other three in my bag. Only if, I'm out of battery. I only taken 70 pictures. Like, oh, that's right. I was taken 8 months ago and I still get taken all the time. Anyway, side matter.
Lori, were you about to say something?
I thought
I heard you speak up about something.
I get so distracted when these boys talk.
Whoa, we're going to go to a break here. This episode of Mac Break Weekly.
We haven't even broken out the puppets yet.
I was hoping for puppets, but this episode of Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Eero. Yes, Eero. Eero, and let me just reach to the side here. I'm going to grab something. Eero. It blankets your whole home. I don't know why I'm looking at the sheet like I don't know about Eero. I have Eero devices in my home. Long before I ever came to Twit as a host, I've had Eero in my home, blanketing my house in Wi-Fi. I've got one main Eero router with I think that's the base station, and two of these are the Eero beacons. If you have a larger home, if you want to sort of spread the Wi-Fi across your whole space, me, for example, I have a three-floor townhomes, and each of those floors, of course, have material in between them that can lead to signal degradation. And so I've got an Eero base station on the top floor because that's where my office is, and then an Eero beacon I have plugged in the main floor, and then one in my garage. And so no matter where I am in my house, it's being provided with excellent Wi-Fi that blankets the entire space in beautiful connectivity. And with the Eero beacon, this plugs directly into the wall. If you want to show this here, it plugs directly into the wall. But what I love about it is, sometimes you're kind of remiss to give up a plug in your house. But this is not just your extra Wi-Fi that's being added to your home. On the bottom of it here, this little strip that you can see is actually an LED light strip. So when I plug this into the wall, it has an ambient light sensor inside of it. And you can set it up so that when your lights turn off or whenever the ambient light in the room is below a certain level, it will shine that light down and give you a little bit of a nightlight wherever you are. You can turn this off if you don't want this feature. You can turn it on, or you can set it to, like I said, change between different times of the day. And then there's also an LED light at the top that kind of gives you information about what the current state of your network is. And you can also turn that off. So if you're a person who's like, I don't want any lights shining off of this thing, I want it to be as recognizable or you know, it doesn't stand out at all, I want it to be inconspicuous, then you can make that setting happen. So I quite like, like I said, I've got two of these beacons in the home that are part of the experience. So you don't need to worry about, you know, standing on one foot and petting a cat while singing Christmas carols to get the Wi-Fi to work in that one room of your house where it's not working. No, with Eero, you blanket your whole house in Wi-Fi and you get the fast signal everywhere. There are some like range extenders and things like that can sort of push your signal where it needs to go, but it's not giving you that full bandwidth that you need no matter where you are in your home. What's great is that Eero sets up in just minutes. You plug it in to your modem, or if you have a modem / router box, first of all, pro tip, use your own system. Don't pay for that rental fee to the ISP. Get your own modem. Use this as your router. You're going to be so happy. I promise you. And you can manage it from the simple app, the Eero app, which I love to use. So you can see what's happening on your network at any time. I have this great thing set up to where every time a new device joins my network, it says, hey, there's a new device on your network. And I can say, okay, that was me. That was definitely me. Or, whoa, did someone guess my password? You can block devices that you don't want accessing your network. You can set certain profiles so that certain devices can only access the Wi-Fi at specific times or can only use so much of your bandwidth. It's fantastic. You can pause the Wi-Fi completely at certain times. So if your dogs are constantly surfing on their iPads when it's dinner time and you're just like, Henry and Mizzy, can you please stop? I'm trying to have dinner with you. Then you can pause the Wi-Fi. They won't be able to access their Candy Crushes and I don't know what else they play. And you can get alerts for all sorts of things, like I said, including devices attempting to join your network when there are new security updates and things like that. It makes it simple to share your Wi-Fi as well. Eero protects and secures the traffic flowing over your network through advanced encryption and security protocols. That includes safe filtering, so you can block content, like I said, inappropriate content, but also phishing sites and things like that. And with a network that expands to fit your needs, you're going to be able to stream, work, and play from every corner of your home. You never have to think about Wi-Fi again with Eero, and that is genuinely the truth. I every time I've had to move, I call my ISP that I'm signing up with and say, I've got my own modem. Stop charging me every month. Then I plug in my Eero to that modem, and my Wi-Fi is just ready to go. Oh, it's so lovely. You can get yours fixed as soon as tomorrow with our deal, because if you go to Eero.com/MacBreak and enter the code MacBreak at checkout, you're going to get free overnight shipping with your order. That's right. Eero.com/MacBreak and enter the code MacBreak at checkout to get your Eero delivered with free overnight shipping. Get it fast so you can have fast Wi-Fi in your home, fast and reliable, no matter where you are. Eero.com/MacBreak. Thank you, Eero. Truly, genuinely love having you as part of my home because my internet, in fact, when I moved from Missouri, my family was very sad that I was taking my Eero stuff with me. And I said, well, you're just going to have to deal because I got to take my Eeros with me. I need them. And of course, I can't get the box back together, but that is Eero. All righty, folks. Apple TV Plus is here. It has launched. It is available. And I've got to tell you, I have not had an opportunity to watch any of the shows, but I've heard good things about, and this is a specific question now that I think about it for Mr. Alex Lindsay over here. I've heard some really good things about the streaming quality of Apple TV Plus. Do you know if they're doing something different that makes it look better?
Yeah, they're not compressing it as much.
Oh, okay.
I don't know anything. I don't know anything secret.
Right.
But yeah. If you look at the bandwidth that people have been reporting, 30 meg stream is a lot of data. You know, for a 4K, you know, to put that online at that level, most times when we're talking about 4K streaming, a lot of us are discussing 12 to 15 megs per second. And they're reportedly, according to some of the articles, I haven't tested it, but doing like 30 megs a second or 29 megabits a second, or, you know, and it would peak bit rate of 41 is what they're saying in the article that you're showing there. And so that's just throwing a, you know, I'm sure that they're spending a lot of time to make it look great. But at the same time, what they're also doing is just throwing more bits at the problem. And I think that it's absolutely necessary for them to do this because they're going to, I think Disney's going to do the same thing. You know, they're going to set, you know, because I mean, the Netflix is all about quick start and all about, you know, all kinds of other things. And it just looks, you know, I know that when I'm watching Netflix, it looks best on my iPhone. Mm-hmm. Like if I make it any bigger than that, I'm going to be frustrated, you know. And I think that when we saw the fiasco that was Game of Thrones on HBO Now.
Yep. Oh, my, you know, if word, you were, if, so bad.
It was when my wife is like, when my wife asks, what is happening here? Like, why is this looking this way? Then you know that there's something very, very wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I complain about everything, you know, but when she's picking it out, you know, it's a big deal. My kids, I had to explain to them what macro blocking was, you know? And so I think that I think part of the competitive race between, I think mostly Apple and Disney is going, they're going to predicate part of their value proposition on quality of the video, because we've been given really bad video, even by our cable networks, yeah. You know, Comcast and everything else.
That's what I was going to ask. Would my ISP have the ability to say, we don't feel like basically handling all that bandwidth, we're going to knock it down to 12?
They can. Yeah. So what happens is that when you're sending, and this is the rumor is this is what actually happened to Game of Thrones in some cases. So what happens is that when you're running a compression, when you're streaming something to someone, you're streaming a whole bunch of resolutions. So you're providing on a server, you're saying, I've got all these resolutions. I got 16 versions of this that are everything from 4K to phone, right? And so there's all of these bits that are available on the server, on the edge. And then there's a manifest, and that manifest is this basically a document that just tells the ISP, this is what you have access to. You know, you can pick this, you can pick this. And so, no, usually that's done by the player. So the player is your player, your Apple TV, your phone, whatever, is looking at the manifest and going, well, you know, I you know, and it's looking at basically the performance, like how fast are the bits coming to me as a player. And it says, you know, I think I'll move up, or this is way too much for me, I'm going to move down. And so when you see it changing, it's making a decision based on the performance that it's seen in how quickly the bits are getting to it and this manifest that it has. Now, what the ISPs have the ability to do, and I've never seen them really do it that much, but I heard that they did it with Game of Thrones because the demand was so high, is that they can take – they basically manipulate the manifest. So they basically take out options. So when the player gets that manifest, comes through – it comes through when they took some of the stuff off the menu. You know, they took the filet mignon off the menu.
4K?
You know,
what is this 4K? Is what you speak.
Exactly. Well, the worst part is that people get caught up when it comes to compression, they get caught up in resolution, when in a lot of times we would be better off with lower resolution but more bits per pixel. You know, and so a 720 stream sometimes looks better than a 4K stream if you're at the same bit rate. You know, if the bit rate is too low that it can't represent that 4K stream, you're just ending up with all kinds of blocks. You're ending up with Game of Thrones, you know. And so we can just refer to Game of Thrones as bad compression and bad screenwriting.
Send emails to Alex Lindsay. I don't want to be any part of that.
It was great until, you know, season
– until they had that Starbucks cup in there. That's when it all went wrong.
No. And they even admitted it. Like these guys, you know, the showrunners admitted it last weekend that they didn't know what they were doing. So anyway, but with the bits, chances are Apple's not going to create demand at the ISP level that is going to require them to do that. Game of Thrones was a unique situation where there's a lot of people that want to watch it live, or want to watch it very near when it's there. And so Apple is creating Apple, not that as many people want to see. So I think that, you know, so the, I think that they, you know, we don't see that very often. I mean, usually you're getting those things. And as a user, I would much rather be told, you're going to have to wait for half an hour to watch this, but it's going to be great.
Yeah.
You know, I would prefer them to give me 80 megs a second. I don't care. You know, like, and just tell me, like, I can schedule when I'm going to watch, like, hey, I'm going to download it. Because I don't watch the movies. I don't say watch movie. I say download the movie.
Right.
And then I go about doing what I'm doing. And when it's ready, I come back. And I want that to be a great experience. And I think that if you're talking about, you know, Apple's talking about 4K, they're talking about, you know, HDR. When you're talking about those things, you know, having it be a crappy experience is not a good way to sell that technology, you know. And so I think that they're definitely going down the right path. And I think they have to do it because I think Disney's been holding back 4K. So they haven't been giving anybody 4K. So it seems like that's what we're going to see there is really high quality from Disney as well. And they bought the BAMTech. BAMTech, so MLB, so Major League Baseball is why all streaming that you watch is kind of – they're one of the big definitions of you know, HLS, which is how you get a lot of your stuff. A lot of that spec has been defined and pushed by MLB. You know, they got in early and they streamed a lot. Yeah. You know, like a lot of stuff. And they had a lot of complaints and they have a lot of suggestions and they have a lot of things that they want.
It's one of the great stories of dog fooding where this – if this technology existed, we would make so much bank, but it doesn't exist, so we're going to have to develop it.
Right. And you know, the level – like when you talk to anyone that has worked there, the like talking to them about how they manage redundancy and process is like – at a whole different level than anything that I usually do. So Disney bought that, you know, bought them,
yeah,
and basically has been slowly pushing off clients as they, you know, because they just want to, they only care about their service, right. You know? And so they have state of the art team. They're pushing hard. And I think that it was very smart for Apple to go in and make sure that we're going to get a high quality experience on our expensive TVs.
Yeah. So will the Major League, this is a little off topic, but will Major League Baseball still be streaming that way? Or are they going to also push them off too? Disney?
No. I think that Major League, I think that they're not going to push MLB off, but I think MLB has its own internal MLB. Now I'm going to say this on air, so I don't really know how the two of them are intertwined. They're not going to kick them off, but you know, BAMTech was an offshoot of MLB that was for external clients. Okay. You know, so I think that's what they ended up with. I don't think they ended up with the MLB infrastructure, which is astounding.
Now, Lori, did iMore do any coverage on helping people with getting their Apple TV Plus subscription to work? I saw some talk that people had trouble redeeming their free year. What do we do? How do we get our free year?
It was kind of on day one, it was a little confusing. I even actually my iPhone, which is my qualified device, even was a little bit wonky when I first opened up the app. First of all, it's in the TV app, so that's where you find it. You're not going to get an email on how to subscribe or anything like that. You might get one that says, "Don't forget that you can get Apple TV Plus for a year," but you just open up the TV app and scroll down until you see get your free offer. If you have a qualified device and you still see this 7-day trial, tap on it anyway. Because it should just take you to the actual offer for the 1-year subscription for free because it's registered your device. So Apple's information states that it has to be claimed on the qualified device. But a couple people that I've talked to said they found that offer on different devices. So if you are on your qualified device and you still don't see the offer and you tap the 7-day free trial and it does not take you to the 1-year free subscription, go find another device, one of your other Apple devices that your Apple ID is signed in with. Try it that way. There's been people saying to restart your iPhone your qualified device and see if it pops up that way. Really, a lot of the confusion, I think, was just in who actually gets to trigger the qualification. There's also a lot of people that were claiming that they were getting the free service when they didn't think that they were supposed to get it. So a couple of things I'll just note really quick. It doesn't have to be an iPhone 11 or an iPhone 11 Pro. It can be any device that Apple is selling right now on their website after September 10th. So if you bought an iPhone XR after September 10th, that qualifies. If you bought an Apple TV 1080, that qualifies as long as you bought it after September 10th. Apple Watches do not qualify. So if you bought a brand new Apple Watch and that's all you bought this year, that will not qualify. It's iPhones, iPads, Apple TVs, and Macs.
And they can't watch it on an Apple Watch.
Yeah. What's right. up well, with that? Yeah. I just want to see it on my
iPod Touches, by the way, are also qualified. So if you buy an iPod Touch, it qualifies as well. So if you're thinking, ooh, I got the free year service and I wasn't supposed to, you might have actually been supposed to. You just didn't realize that your device qualified. Well, and for
I don't think Apple's trying to kick people out. Right. Like, you know, I think that, you know, I don't think, you know, they're just looking for a reasonably good reason to give it to you. Like, you know,
is that a Hostess apple pie? Yeah. We'll give it to you. You bought a Hostess apple pie.
Because we would love to talk in the next quarter about how many people are using it. You know, because that's how you get more folks in Hollywood to sign up contracts with you. Not that.
And Tim Cook said in the Apple earnings call something to that effect, which was, it's basically marketing. We want a lot of people to test out the service, and we want to give those people enough time to find out that they love the service. So we think, you know, this is Cook saying, we think giving them a year free is going to prove to them that this is a service worth keeping. And we're willing to, you know, to take that hit in order to give the service to enough people to get the word of mouth out and give them enough time to realize this is something they want to
keep. And I think it's genius. Yeah. I mean, I think it's genius. Mm-hmm. I think this is definitely the way to do it.
Particularly because they're competing with how many different services they're starting up, most of which their firepower is what kind of libraries can we acquire? $500 million just for the South Park library for one service. And so Apple, they're very cognizant that they are not in the acquisition of libraries business. We are in the development of original series and acquisition of movies and documentaries business. So I think they understand that for the first year, they're not going to win based on content. So let's get people who the shows that we do have, it will find their fans. People will get trained to use the TV app as not just for Apple TV, but also as their point of access to all the other TV apps they have.
My biggest complaint about the TV app, I think my whole family's biggest complaint about the TV app, is that I just want to be able to filter out things that I don't have a subscription to.
Yeah.
You know, like, I am tired of it telling me that it's available on some service that I don't care about. Yeah. You know, like, I'm not subscribed to that. Wow, so let's take that
out. If I spoke Korean and was interested in historical soap operas, that would be a great thing to inform me of, Apple TV. But as is, A for effort, but yeah. I don't have.
So another thing here, and this is an interesting story to me, given that there's not that big of a difference. The New York Times put out a piece behind Apple's, quote, slow roll marketing push for its new streaming service. And in it, they talk about a report from, let's see, it's iSpot TV, that says Apple spent $19.9 million on television commercials for Appy TV Plus, which is the kids' version of Apple TV Plus. That's not true. And that same month, they spent $38.6 million on ads for the iPhone. So again, about $20 million on Apple TV Plus and about $40 million on iPhone. That same thing was the case in September, where Apple spent about $15 million on Apple TV and $30 million on television for the iPhone, rather. So it's about half of the cost that they're spending on iPhone. And the argument here is that where Apple is putting its marketing budget is the thing that they care about more.
I think that's a very simplistic view of that process.
Good. I'm glad we all feel the same way.
Like bordering on glib, I would say.
Uninformed, completely silly. The fact that they're putting half of what they're putting into iPhone, the thing that is half of their revenue,
big piece of pie.
The fact that they're putting half of that into Apple TV is an enormous amount of money. You know, into something that probably isn't going to generate any significant revenue for another year. Yeah. You know, that they're dumping into that is an immense commitment to what they're doing. It is not that it's half as important as the iPhone. The iPhone is generating half of their revenue. You know, like that's all I gotta say.
Yes,
and I'm just gonna step away. So,
to follow up with that mathematical analogy there, we're talking about, you know, services is 20% of Apple's business right now, and Apple TV isn't even a part of that at the moment, because when their earnings call happened, they didn't really have services, the TV Plus, as part of their services. So to spend half of their budget, or, you know, half of what their iPhone budget for marketing is, just on one thing that isn't even part of the 20% of their services revenue, that's big. That's a lot of spending.
proportionate to the ROI, it's probably 100 times the iPhone expenditure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad we all feel the same way about that, because I was thinking whenever I first saw this, it talked about this slow roll, and of course the New York Times reports it, and then a lot of the blogs that cover Apple took that story and sort of regurgitated it in some ways to say, did you know Apple's got this slow roll marketing plan? And it just felt a little bit from the get-go, a little bit silly.
They're really good at English class, not as good at math.
Yeah.
Perhaps that is the case.
Are they good at English?
There is a lot going on here. It's like I'm reading the reviews of a lot of the shows, and a lot of them are turning into reviews of Apple TV itself. And it's like, what an immense, as if you don't have enough stress launching a brand new show as a showrunner. The fact that people are going to judge the efficacy of one of the world's largest tech companies' ability to serve TV at all based on whether the first 3 episodes of your new series that you don't think is going to really heat up until episode 6 anyway.
Because Lilyhammer was amazing.
Yeah.
Sorry. It was horrible. Did you ever watch Lilyhammer?
Mm-mm.
Can't
say I did.
So I certainly don't think show reviews should have anything to do with the user interface of the TV app. Absolutely. But the user interface of the TV app, especially when you're watching TV Plus shows, is terrible. It's terrible. At the end of an episode, I was trying to get, the actors' names so that I could write them down in my review. So I'm trying to pause, and it would just try to force me into the next episode.
Oh.
And you can't quickly go back to all episodes. You're just stuck in this, I'm stuck in this episode, and I can either go to the next episode or go back to I don't even remember what it is, but I remember thinking, like, this is such a bad design for the user interface. I feel locked into this episode, and I don't think it was intended that way either. I don't think they're trying to lock me into that episode. It was very frustrating.
Yeah. Autoplay is the bane of, I think, any streaming service. I cannot tell you how much I hate when, like, I'm watching Hulu, and I'm enjoying that. I really enjoyed this week's episode of Bob's Burgers. I'm still happy and full of love. And then I don't know what it is about the human brain, but I see now an episode of whatever is going to start talking 5. And I'm like, oh, my God, I got to defuse this bomb and quickly hit the pause button.
Yeah.
So that doesn't start playing the show I didn't ask for. And it's so
because
annoying.
Then it's going to start recommending that to you because you accidentally watched 30 seconds of it. I completely understand.
One question that we have in the chat, because I've seen this with Amazon Prime Video. You can, while a show is going on, I think they call it X-ray or something like that, you can see who the people are in the show. Can you press the Siri button on the Siri remote and say, who's on the screen right now? And will it show you the actors that are performing, or we don't know?
I have no idea.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know.
We'll have to try that.
Just because I haven't tried it. It's a really great question. Yeah.
The feature on Amazon is pretty damn nice. It is practically like live annotations as you go. If you turn it on, you can turn it off. But if you want to know, here is this person, here is their character, here is the background of here. So many of their programming is amended that way. Because especially when you're binge watching and they want to reintroduce somebody that you haven't seen since 2 p.m. earlier that day when you accidentally decided to give Miss Maisel a try. Yeah, that's sort of stuff that
accidentally.
It's 8 o'clock. My kid is probably still at soccer practice waiting for me to pick him up. But yeah, it's a great feature. And I'm one of the things I'm looking forward to most of all with Apple TV Plus is to see if they find a way to make their TV app something better than simply a playback, a digital VCR, and make it a way that makes me enjoy television a lot more. Just a simple act of making sure the captions are always correct and not simply phonetic, and making sure that there's a way to when you're doing a fast forward that maybe there's just some cues to say, oh, well, here every time, just like when you're doing a search on Chrome, if there are like 12 incidences of this word, they'll put like little yellow pips in the scroll bar to let you know that the thing that you would look for are here, 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 and here. The amazing, it's nice to have so many different TV apps to compare these things to, because I'm always blown away that YouTube is a surface that is owned by Google or the Alphabet. They're the app. The YouTube app is created by Google and Alphabet. I'm running it on a Chromebook that's running that hardware and operating system made by Google. But the interface for this damn thing is so crap that how easy is
Are you talking about YouTube TV?
I'm talking about experiences where it's like I just missed something. How do I go back like 20 or 30 seconds? And on one app you can double tap the screen. On the desktop you can't do it that way. Or how do I do picture in picture? Well, you need a special plugin. And
I just feel like I would never give up YouTube TV. By the way, I love YouTube TV. That is my live television, you know, conduit, right? And I love the fact that I can just hit record on everything. You know, so I do lots of, you know, so I just have everything recorded all the time. Like, it's just like everything's on DVR because it's just a metadata. It's not putting it anywhere, you know, it's just saying you want access to that later. And because I do research on broadcast, you know, I just have all these things on record. And so I love YouTube TV, but it feels like you're constantly fighting it.
Yeah.
You're like trying to like, no, don't start auto scrolling. Don't right, go here. Exactly. Don't go there. Don't, you know, so I get that these things are complicated, but I will say that I feel like every update to Apple TV is worse than the last one as far as my user experience, which seems like it's going backwards.
Yikes. That is a bit of an issue. Folks, we are going to be back with, this show could very well go for 3 hours if we let it, but we won't let it, I promise. Don't you worry. Remember, this is Mac Break, not Mac Keep Going.
Day.
I don't know. Mac Day. Yeah, there
feel,
we go. Yeah.
I feel as though he's talking to us, Alex. I don't know.
Not at all. I'm loving this conversation, and there's really so many topics to cover, but we can't get to them all. However, it is time to take a little bit of a break here to tell you about ExpressVPN. I was just talking about virtual private networks and how important they are. And I've been using ExpressVPN for a while now across all of my devices. It's a really reliable way to make sure that my data on all of those devices is secure without having to worry about slowing down my internet speed. Often that's a big issue with a virtual private network is you turn it on, and then suddenly it takes forever to load a page. No, ExpressVPN doesn't do that. They make it awesome and super easy to get it turned on, get it installed, get it turned on, and then still have that reliable connection that you're looking for. Now, why should you care about encrypting your data? Why do you need a virtual private network to encrypt your data? Well, that's because it's easy for hackers to bypass Wi-Fi security and get at your information. There are flaws such as CRAC, that's key reinstallation attack. The researchers who find these flaws, who report them, often come up with clever names for them. And in this case, it's CRAC. If you ever use Wi-Fi at a hotel or a shopping mall, well, stop doing that without a virtual private network. Seriously, if you're listening to this right now at a hotel, just quit listening, go get ExpressVPN, and then come back and start listening again. You're going to be a lot safer with that. You're sending your data over an open network. That means there's no encryption at all between you and the people out there listening. The best way to ensure that all of your data is encrypted and can't be read by hackers is by using ExpressVPN. You can download the app on your computer or smartphone and then use the internet as you normally would. You just tap or click on the one button to secure 100% of your network data. It makes it super simple. And one of the things whenever we first were checking out ExpressVPN, they said, oh, you know, get an account and go from there, is all the places that this doggone thing is available. It's available on so many different devices. So whether you're running a Windows machine, you're running a Linux machine like Leo, I think I just, he felt that disturbance in the force as I mentioned Linux. Your MacBook, your Apple TV, your set-top box, whatever. ExpressVPN is there for you. You can get it installed everywhere, which is fantastic. It's fast, it's reliable, and it's recommended as the number one VPN provider by both TechRadar and CNET. And here is where things get exciting and I start nerding out. ExpressVPN takes privacy and security to the next level. And the way they do that is by inventing a technology called Trusted Server to ensure that VPN servers run from RAM and no data logs are written to a server's hard drive, even by accident. I heard about this. I remember listening to Leo was talking about ExpressVPN, and I think I was in my office in the other room in the studio, and he was talking about this trusted server technology, and I was curious about what that actually meant. So I went to ExpressVPN's website and started reading about ExpressVPN's trusted server technology, and folks, it is really cool. So a lot of VPN services out there, and first of all, a VPN service, if you're wondering what the heck is going on there, normally it's you on your device connecting directly to some client somewhere. So if you are watching a YouTube video, then you are connecting over the internet to that YouTube video, and then it comes back. You get to watch it on your phone. But what ExpressVPN and other VPNs do is they sort of provide something in the middle. So we'll use the microphone as the example here. So your data goes to ExpressVPN stuff, and then from there it goes to the video that you're watching, and then it goes back to ExpressVPN and then goes to you. This virtual private network in the middle keeps it so that this video knows that it's you that's watching said video. Now, a lot of VPNs out there will use hard drive technology to run their servers, to work with this VPN. And the problem with that is that those are often stored for a long period of time. Your data, your browsing history is stored on those servers for a long period of time. And so if that data is ever compromised, or if a government entity comes and says, we want access to that, then they can get access to that. ExpressVPN does their stuff on RAM. That's a random access memory. It's volatile. That means when the power gets flipped off, whoop, all that data is gone. It does not stick around. And all of ExpressVPN's trusted servers have this technology. So it's never writing to the hard drive. It's immediately gone the moment it gets done. But what's even cooler, in my opinion, is the fact that every single one of their servers is all running up-to-date software at all times. How they do this is that when they refresh when they turn the servers back on afterward, they've got one device that is then reinstalling the OS again, the server technology again onto each of those servers. So it's always going to have the latest and greatest version, always be up to date. They're not worried about some servers that are still running, last month's processes. No, it's always up to date. That is trusted server. I had to geek out about that and tell you all, because I think that is really what sets ExpressVPN apart. You're not worried about them holding onto your data. A lot of times that's the issue with a VPN. You pay them money and then they, instead of your internet service provider, are tracking you. ExpressVPN's using that RAM. It goes away. So they don't want your data. They don't care about it. If you want the best in online security, truly, and privacy protection, head over to expressvpn.com/MacBreak. And that's going to get you 3 extra months free when you get a 1-year package. Protect your internet today with the VPN I trust to keep my data safe, my browsing safe. Head to expressvpn.com/MacBreak to get started. Thank you, ExpressVPN, for keeping my and Henry and Mizzy's data secure as they play their games that I can't get them to stop playing. We're supposed to be eating dinner. Throwback. All right, folks, we are back. We have to talk about Adobe, because the Adobe Max conference took place and Adobe Photoshop, real Photoshop on iPad, is finally here after so many months of them promising it. And they also have given us a little preview of Illustrator for iPad, which I think is great. So
yeah, it's pretty cool. I downloaded it yesterday. It's pretty thin right now, the iPad version Photoshop. There are actually some things that you'll try to activate, and it says this in orange. I'm sorry, this feature is coming shortly.
We're working on it.
Right. And it's important to notice that, note their language very carefully. They say that they've been promising all along real Photoshop. They didn't promise the complete Photoshop. And when they say the real Photoshop, they mean that the same pipelines, the same code that is powering these, whatever features are crossing over, you're seeing the exact same thing. So if you're trying to do so if you've got a Photoshop file in the cloud with layers, with certain effects, that you will have, you don't have the separate app that is doing its best to pretend to be Photoshop. It will be Photoshop, but don't expect that you're going to get every single blend mode. You're going to get every single pencil tool or paint tool. But it's pretty satisfying to see how it works. And I'm really keen to see if it will convince iPad users to subscribe to like a Adobe Creative Cloud package, or whether it's more likely to encourage people who are subscribing to Creative Cloud packages to buy iPads, because it could go either way.
Yeah, it came out while I was traveling, so I haven't downloaded it yet. But I think the one complaint I saw was that the RAW is not it's not supporting RAW, which seems like I mean, there's a lot of things you can leave out, but leaving that out, when people are looking for something serious, they're like immediately like, oh, I don't understand. So that, I think that was probably not a home run.
Not a great thing to lead off on, yes.
Yeah, exactly. I probably would have waited until I had that, you know, to release. Yeah. But I think it's great. I mean, I think that a lot of us are still looking for that great editing package. There are, you know, there are other editing packages on the iPad. They're not, you know, they don't. I think the hard part for a lot of us, I use, you know, I have Pixelmator and Affinity and Photoshop. The problem is I started using Photoshop in 1991. So I have a hard, you know, there are certain things like I keep on trying to use Affinity and Pixelmator for stuff. And so I go over there and I use it for a little while and then I go, okay, I can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, and it'll always be something silly, you know, like I need to be able to export TGA files and they don't, they're like, well, that's not a modern architecture. And I'm like, okay, but I still need it.
Yeah.
You know, and it would take you like a weekend to write, you know, like, you know, it's a file format, you know? And so, so there's little things that I need that keep on bringing back to Photoshop. And I think that's Adobe's advantage in modernizing it and getting it on the iPad is something that they have to do. And I think they're doing that fairly well. And I think they've done a great job in general of figuring out iOS. Both Autodesk and Adobe saw this coming. They've been putting out little apps for years, you know, to test the water, figure out how they're going to make it work. And then they've kind of backed up and put something real out. So I think that they've approached it in the right way.
Yeah, I agree.
So I tried out Photoshop this morning and for iOS Today talked about it a little bit. In fact, you should definitely check out iOS Today because we talked about all of those things, both the process of using Photoshop now on the iPad as well as Illustrator, which will be coming out soon, some AR stuff. And then we had Rosemary Orchard on and she went into depth about her writing process. It was a very, very, very good episode, and that's all thanks to Rosemary Orchard for coming incredibly prepared. And with even we were switching between, I just have to talk about this for a second. We were switching between, of course, as you normally do, the switching between cameras, but she had it set up to where she could show her iPad view, even though she's coming to us all the way from her home office in Vienna, I believe. And I just thought that was fantastic. So it was a great show. And if you want to do great stuff on your iPad or your iOS device, then you have got to check out this morning's episode because it was, I'm beside myself with how awesome she was, truly. But anyway, back to this Adobe Photoshop. There's also Adobe Aero, which is an AR thing. We were having some trouble with that this morning when I first launched it. The axis was off, and so the camera was backward, and I force quit it and tried it again, and it worked a little bit better. It's clear that that fits more into Adobe's kind of weird, underpowered iOS apps versus the full-on processes. But one of the things, it's weird for me, when I first started learning Photoshop, when I was in middle school, so as our manager Colleen said today, oh, so you mean yesterday? Yes, it wasn't that terribly long ago that I was in middle school. But when I was
almost has a beard, people.
Yeah, come on.
Okay.
So a year ago, when I was in middle school, I spent a couple summers learning how to use the Adobe suite of apps, and Photoshop was my main one. And I was a freelance graphic designer early on in high school. I did that kind of as a side gig and, you know, went to do that a little bit more later on. But my point is I have used Photoshop for a long time, but not for photo editing in the way that some people do, where we, you know, you're lightening up things and changing. Lightroom was kind of always my tool for that. And so the RAW support was not a be all end all kind of broken at launch feature for me. I was really excited because Lori can attest to this these days, because I don't do freelance graphic design, except whenever I'm designing podcast art on the rare occasion. Lori can attest to the fact that what I like to do with Photoshop is turn jokes that I make with friends and with coworkers into weird Photoshop manipulations. So there was one time where Lori was was talking about, I believe, was it involved a goose or something? And I think maybe you said the goose is getting kicked. And I photoshopped.
I have a thing that I really want to kick a goose.
Yes, Lori really wants to kick a goose. So of course I had to
because they're so big and fluffy.
You're so big and fluffy. I just want to kick you. That didn't come out. That I never connected those two together. But I
do you kick squirrels in the park, Lori?
They're not big and fluffy.
They're part of they're fluffy, and believe me, this close to winter, they are pretty darn big.
They're not as apparently
not as hard to kick as you might imagine, though, Laurie.
Apparently not as kickable as a goose. But so I took that, and I can't find it now. I'm sure it's probably somewhere. But I took that information of her wanting to kick a goose and may use Photoshop to create a photo where she is kicking a goose. Thank goodness Lori's a rock star.
So here's evidence right now. If somebody tries to use that against me, there's proof that this was Photoshopped and that I didn't actually
exactly
kick a goose.
There were no gooses
kicked. You know, I mean, the first thing that Ozzy Osbourne did was kick a bat, a live bat.
And then it just went
just got out of hand, and suddenly by degrees it started being normal.
It always starts with goose kick or with the kicking and goes from there. So anyway, I'm excited that now when somebody makes a silly joke, I can use my iPad to create this thing. I don't need raw photos. I just need the ability to have multiple layers and masking. And with the Apple Pencil and direct manipulation, it'll be even easier for me to make image masks to make Lori kick a goose or whatever jokes
I'm
making.
No, you don't have to make her. You just have to try to stop her. That's the hard thing.
Yes. It is very difficult to get her to not kick a goose.
Learning all kinds of things today. Yeah. I mean,
let me just be
sad.
Clear. I have never kicked a goose. They're just so big and fluffy, you just want to go kick one.
reach for comment. The accused claimed that she never, okay, that's fine. We'll include that.
Staying out of this conversation. Yeah.
What I love is that it's sort of being...
You don't want to be part of it. Believe me, if you were listening to this conversation, you would be... Yeah. You know,
it's sort of being pushed as this idea that everybody would understand what she means. I mean, they're so big and fluffy. You want to kick a goose. Everybody wants to kick a goose.
Everybody wants
to kick a goose. Larry's there digging a hole for herself, and there you are, like hand her more shovels.
And I guess my whole thing is there's a lot of reasons to want to kick a goose. I mean, they're mean. They poop everywhere. They go into the garden.
You have no sense of empathy?
I grew up with geese.
They're stealing your bells.
And there people say, when people tell my father, like, hey, your geese are beautiful. He's like, please take one home. he's like, let's get him out of here.
How does that song go? Everybody wants to kick a goose.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm sorry. My voice is shot. Normally I'm beautiful, a beautiful singer. Oh my goodness. I knew I was going to be able to find it. Here is the photo, let's see.
There you go.
Of Lori kicking a goose. There we go. Yeah, see, the goose even has like, I don't even know what to call those, like wind.
Speed lines.
The soulless eyes of a remorseless killer, like a shark. Yeah, you got that one right, absolutely knocked down.
Yeah, it's a very, that was the only photo that I could find where a leg was available for kicking. So she sort of just rested against the tree while she kicked the goose across the park is what happened there. Anyway, that's why I'm excited for Photoshop on iPad.
Photoshop. This is the societal need for
Micah is going to become my meme maker for the rest of you. I will go to you whenever somebody says something. I'll just say, Micah, get me this.
In fact, that is a regular occurrence for me with other friends as well. So you're welcome to join that party of friends who say, Micah, can you do this really quick? And I'm like, well, really quick doesn't actually mean really quick, but sure, I'll work on this for you.
But on your iPad, maybe it will be really quick.
True.
Micah, I would like to become a fast-moving internet meme that gets me shamed by the entire world and lose every job that I have or will ever have. Can you get right on that?
All you have to do is tweet something. You don't need my help with that. You just tweet the wrong thing and that'll take care of it for you. Or kick a goose. That will also get you in lots of trouble. I think that covers that. I'm trying to see if there's anything else on here that we should cover before we say goodbye. Apple, of course, has issued the update so that HomePod won't get bricked for certain users, which is nice. That's a good thing. We don't want that to happen. And I keep getting that notification despite turning it off. So other than those news bits.
I thought it was the timer saying, stop talking, stop talking.
That's what it should be. We'll call that a day on the news. It's time for our picks of the week. So, Lori Gill, you know what? We're starting with you again.
Okay. Well, we're out of October, so I am no longer covering horror. But we are getting into winter, and for some people, we're in winter. It's 78 degrees for me, though. So,
in 78
so
degrees
I'm not dealing with a problem. But I am definitely going to pronounce this wrong. I have never asked Remy how to pronounce it. I think it's Muho. They make these incredible insulated touchscreen gloves that are fully insulated all over. It's not just the fingertips and the thumbs. They make a variety of styles. You can get them in leather or in knit, or these ones are my favorite because they're warm enough to block out wind, but they're not too thick. They're just sort of like, they remind me of like isotoners kind of. Yeah. They're a little bit thick, but not too thick. And I absolutely love these gloves. They updated them this year too. There's a couple of little special fancy differences in them right now, which I don't have a pair yet. I've got one coming to me. But they're just absolutely fantastic. They're super comfortable. And the entire glove is touchscreen. Mm-hmm. Let me point that out again. It's not just the fingers. It's the entire glove. If you wanted to use your palm to swipe, you could. Your knuckles, if you know your hands are full and you just have to use the back of your hand to swipe on your phone, these are touchscreen gloves all over. And it works really well. They're absolutely fantastic. So, mm-hmm. These are great for winter. Let me just say, get them. They're amazing.
So if I had some toe socks of this and I put a goose on my phone, I could kick the goose and it would actually move if I did. No,
Everything
I love
that
these.
You just said is horrifying.
All of that is horrifying. I agree. Thank you. I have some Mujo gloves as well.
I thought that we went into that like 15 or 17 minute digression on earwax. I thought that we couldn't top that, but... if we all pulled together, put our shoulders into it, we can really make this. We can really make Leo never want to go on vacation ever again.
I love my Mujo. I've got some Mujo gloves as well. I think mine were like knit and leather or something like that. I don't recall, but I need to find them. I have to say really quickly, I had a bit of a weird out-of-body experience there for a second, Lori, because you said it's 78 degrees there. And normally this is where I would usually tease you about you talking about it being winter and 78 degrees because I lived in the Midwest and it's probably 40 or something there. But I'm not in the Midwest anymore, so I jokingly mocked you a little bit, and it's 79 degrees here in Petaluma. So excuse me, I'm so sorry. I take back my mocking and I adore you. Alex Lindsay, what have you got for us?
So I have been playing with this camera for a little while.
Holy moly.
And I am super happy with it. So
you're not even in the same room with this.
That looks like a transformer.
Exactly.
Okay. So I have accessorized it a little bit. So I'll explain that as well. So this is the Blackmagic 6K camera. So this is kind of the big brother or sister to the 4K, $2,500, and the big thing about it is number one is that the footage that comes off of it is amazing. So what one of the things has changed is it's no longer a 4/3 chip; it's a Super 35, softer depth of field, but also much lower grain structure. So I've shot up to 5,000 ISO and really had it been completely acceptable footage. The biggest thing that makes it really fun to shoot with is that the interface is so nice. I mean, so when you're used to dealing with video cameras, and for a long time, I was very attached to my Sony interface and my R-Gs and G-Rs and all the things that I had to do. And then Canon had, the C300 has the most horrible interface ever made. And so they all have these kind of funky, if an electronics company made something and didn't really understand interface, that's what you get, right? Because the engineers are like, well, you can get to everything, so then we're done, And one of the things that Blackmagic has done is really make the access to everything that you want to do in the camera at your fingertips. And so it's not just that the camera shoots great footage. It's not just that it's a small form factor, that it's cost effective. It's that when I want to change the interface, when I change the frame rate, the shutter, the iris, the ISO, if I want to do everything's tap, 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 tap on the back of the screen. The screen is gorgeous. It's easy to get to. It's my favorite camera that I've spent a lot of money on cameras. But it's the favorite. It's not that it's probably my favorite camera that I've ever bought, you know, for video. And I paid for it. It's not like they sent me one, you know? And so, but I think that it is, and it's kind of the core to me, you know, to what I'm doing right now. I love the camera. That's all, you know, I didn't want to talk about it until I had time to play with it for a while. And I've taken it all over the world. I've been shooting with it in Cambodia and India and all over the U.S. And it's just a joy. Now, what I've done here to accessorize it is I put a small rig ectoskeleton on it. I'm just used to having lots of places that I can attach things. And so I immediately take cameras and put skeletons on it. Now, the one problem with this is that it means that I can't use the new battery pack that Blackmagic makes for these cameras, for both 4K and the 6K. It's a little bit of a problem because the Canon batteries that I talked about earlier last like 10 seconds. And the Canon battery will last like 30 minutes, but any kind of other cheaper version of a Canon battery will last very, very – it'll go very quickly. If you set it to RAW, it pulls on that battery really, really hard and doesn't survive very long. So – now the camera takes CFast, which are super expensive. So I have a couple of them, but they're these are CFast cards, and they're fast. They record, and then they also take. You can record ProRes onto SD cards. So you have SD CFast, and you can choose which ones you're using. Now the other option is putting a drive. So it's got a USB-C input.
Nice.
So not only, you know, so you can actually just hook a drive up. So I'm using the Samsung T5, 1 terabyte, which is actually much cheaper than the CFast.
Wow.
So you just plug this into the camera, and now you've got a terabyte that you can just record to. And it's, you know, in this little small rig or whatever, it's very easy to, you know, this is all just kind of attached to it. Yeah. So it's great. It's much easier to use in the field is just to pull this drive out and then plug it into your computer and pull stuff off of it and go back to what you were doing. So it's using standard EF, Canon EF mount. So you're just, all your Canon lenses are usable. It's just a great, great camera. My complaint about it is that the biggest complaint that I have is that it is when you set it to 6K RAW or 6K sensor size, you're limited to 50 frames a second instead of 59.94, which is kind of an odd thing. As an American, it's an odd thing. If you're in Australia, where they make the camera, it's not an odd thing because they go up to, you know, their faster rate is 50. So I'm guessing that has to do with a bandwidth issue to the storage. But it's a little bit frustrating. And admittedly, 6K RAW at 50 frames a second is a lot of data. Yeah, right. So it's on the outer edge of what these things can do. But I would, if you've been hemming and hawing over this camera, you know, it's not a live camera. You know, I use a lot of different cameras for live. I've used the Mini Ursas most recently. You don't have the same, it's not really built for that. Yeah. It's really, I mean, I think you could, with the new little switcher that they make, you could probably connect it and you could use it as a live camera, but it's not going to have the same features that you'd expect from a studio camera. But as the carrier that I carry around to shoot footage, and what I'm going to be shooting a bunch of footage on this fall, this is the camera.
Yeah.
You know, so it's an amazing camera. I think that the back order is pretty long. I think they're making about as many as they can make. So it's really hit a sweet spot for the industry as far as price and performance. I mean, $2,500 for what this does is kind of amazing.
Yeah, I mean, ever since you showed it to me, I got this reaction of like, I have $2,500. I'm going to make another $2,500. But part of me is thinking, okay, he's got to go to bed sometime.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll be like Indiana Jones with a weight of like similar sizes. you're about to miss your train now. Come on, grab your bag. Don't even open it.
I know I'm forgetting something. I can't figure out what it is.
I'll send it to you.
Exactly.
Yep.
So it's
it is quite a thing. He was showing me how running through the interface and how big that screen is, and it really is the sort of thing that makes you feel as though no matter what you want to do with video, it's attainable. You are the worst part of this whole system, that you are letting the camera down. The camera is not going to let you.
Well, and the thing is that when you get as someone who's owned a lot of Sony cameras and Panasonic cameras and Canon cameras and Blackmagic cameras, the one thing you know is that when you buy these other cameras, maybe you update them every once in a while. You have to send them in, or there's an engineering update, or there's a process. With Blackmagic, you know that every 2 or 3 months you're going to get some upgrade. It's going to add a whole bunch of new features that you didn't even know you needed. And so, you know, they added a whole new set of features that are leveling and all kinds of other little things that are great. And so you just know that when you buy the hardware, you're just going to keep on getting more out of it than what you had before.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my pick.
Well, mine doesn't have a cool skeleton on it, but I happen to have a Blackmagic 6K camera right here as well.
Look at you.
So now I feel very special. Of course, there's no lens on it. So they said, we'll show it to you, but you will probably break it. So we're only going to give you this part of it. Because I have no idea what to do with this thing. But hey, it looks cool and it feels heavy. So sure, $2,500.
I can bring you some lenses.
Oh my goodness, I got to put this down. That makes me nervous. That's well. Anyway, that we have this too, and I think we've been playing around with it. Have we been shooting some footage of?
I was talking to Alex earlier, and we're hoping to have Alex and Ant do a review on hands-on tech.
Yeah. So you heard that? There's a little whisper for you that there may be a review of this with Alex, Lindsay, and Ant Pruitt of the 6K Blackmagic design camera, which will only further convince Andy Anatko that he needs to purchase this device, apparently. Now, how about that skeleton? Is that multiple things together, or is that just like a one? What's the company you go to for your skellies?
I use this. This is a small rig. I have to admit that there are other ones that are more expensive, and this was just a cheap one that I could put on. And I mean, not cheap, but I mean, inexpensive. You know, so it is a inexpensive one that did what I needed to do. I wasn't super particular about it needing to have, you know, quarter 20s in some places and 3/8 in other places. I just need more mount points. So I don't even know what I'm going to use them for, but I use, like, when I get a camera, I almost always buy an ectoskeleton for it. So I want, you know, cheese plates or other things. Like, I have a whole bunch of little micros of the Blackmagic micros, and I just immediately got the wooden camera, you know, little box right. for it. And now you can figure out while you're shooting, oh, I need to connect it from the side, or I need to add another light or another mic or whatever, and all those things become simple. And so it's kind of the thing you get when you buy a camera, and it also protects the camera a bit, you know, from stuff. And it, you know, things like, oh, I gotta connect a drive, well, that's just a little, that was like a $20 thing on top of the, that just mounts to, they make the drive, as you know, the drive holder. But you know, the point is that it becomes kind of a system that you use for that.
It also, again, you're not in the room with this thing. It also elevates this from sexy to
sexy. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a pretty awesome. They packed a lot into one piece of hardware.
It's pretty darn nice.
Okay. Let's go ahead and move on to the next pick, which comes from Andy.
A pick and a tip. We were talking about Photoshop, just a reminder that not everyone is a fan of subscription software, but I've been subscribing to the Photoshop photography, the Adobe Creative Suite photography package, which for $10 a month gets you the full version of Photoshop and all the updates that come with it, the full version of Lightroom, as well as mobile apps. And the iPad version of Photoshop is also included in that package price, which in and of itself costs $10 a month if you're not subscribed to anything else. And when people ask, like, what's the difference? Why do I need Photoshop? You don't need Photoshop, but it really is the difference between the ability to do really great things simply with a different app within the limitations and the imagination of those developers versus with Photoshop, where there's, I don't think there's anything you can't do with it. There's just a question of, do you know how to do it in Photoshop? There was hang on one second. Okay. And so, I really do recommend it. My photography has sort of taken another leap in my personal satisfaction over the past year, chiefly because of the way that I've been using it. The other thing I want to talk about is that a friend of mine had a bad experience at an Apple store. His iPhone 6 battery died while he was on vacation, and he took it in, and I don't think that they were really trying to give him a bill of goods, but they basically tried to talk him into buying a new phone instead. Just remember that if you have a really, really old iPhone, you can still get a new one. You get a new battery installed for $49. They're almost always successful. You can back up your phone beforehand by plugging into AC power. And it's not, when I mentioned this on Twitter, a bunch of people, one of whom was a former manager of a Genius Bar, said that it is kind of policy from Apple down to say, if you can walk people into a new purchase, walk them into a new purchase, which bummed me out. It tracked with things that I'd heard.
Their job, though.
No, well, not really. I mean,
their job is to try to sell iPhones to people.
No, I think that their job, I really think their job should be to say, here are the options available to you. If you are perfectly happy with your iPhone 6 and you don't necessarily want to spend hundreds of dollars on a new phone, we can put a new $50 battery in it and it'll be fixed and it'll be working. So just a reminder to people that battery swaps are really, really cheap. They work. And also, even if you have an unsupported phone, there might even be a third party who will be able to do it for you. I will say that after an iPhone is 3 or 4 years old, the difference in the improvements that you will be able to appreciate after having been on the bench for 3 or 4 years are astounding. And maybe it is a good idea, even if you're just upgrading to an iPhone 8 from an iPhone 6 and you're saving a bunch of money. But just make sure you're making that choice not because someone has told you, oh, well, sometimes it doesn't work, and oh, Apple's probably going to stop supporting this in a couple of months anyway, and just make sure you're making the right informed decision.
All right. Thank you for that tip and that pick. I guess that just leaves me. I was spoiled when I was in Missouri for several reasons, but one of those reasons was that I had a smart garage door opener. And so I got used to the idea of not having to panic every time I got to a new place and thought, oh, by golly, did I close my garage door? That is always something that it's right there at the, I don't worry about stoves being on or leaving the hair blower plugged in. Instead for me, it is, did I close the garage door? And so most mornings what I do is I drive out of my garage and I make an active mental point to look back as I hit the button and make sure that the garage door goes down. I suppose I could mitigate some of that fear by just locking the door that leads from my garage into my house, but still everything that's in my garage then is available and vulnerable. So I don't like the idea of not being able to know when my garage door is closed or open. And I just happened to see that there's a great deal right now on Amazon. It's normally $50 and has been even more than that, but right now it's down to $30. It's the MyQ Smart Garage Door Opener. And what this does is it allows you to connect your garage door opener, regardless of brand, as long as it has the two safety sensors that are in front of your garage door. Those are the things that say, no, 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 the laser is broken, or the signal is broken, so we're not going to close the garage door. You use that as the tool to sort of determine, okay, I've got a new enough garage door that this will work. But this replaces or can be used in conjunction with your garage door remote. And one of the devices goes on the garage door itself, and it acts as the way to tell, okay, I think it's got an accelerometer inside, if I'm not mistaken, or a gyroscope. And it can say, well, because I'm facing this way, then I know the garage door is down. But then if I'm facing this way, then the garage door is open. And so no matter where I am, I can see the garage door is closed or it's open. But it also has a built-in repeater that sends the signal, or it can figure out what the signal is for your specific garage door, and you can use that to close and open the garage door no matter where you are. So it is an app-connected device that allows me to, even if I got to work and found out that my garage door was open, I could easily hit that button and bring it down. So I am returning to what I once had with my smart garage door opener, but without getting in trouble with any land without any property managers who would be like, why are you replacing the garage door opener we've installed with your own? Don't have to worry about that. I can just use this tool. So the fact that it's on sale right now, $30, it's Prime delivery, ships from and sold by Amazon. I said, well, I've got to do this because I'm tired of having those moments of anxiety where I don't know if Mizzy and Henry are going to run out of my garage and take to the streets. So that is the MyQ smart garage door opener. Whew, folks, we have reached the end. We have done it. We can take a break. It is the end of another episode of Mac Break Weekly. We just have to say goodbye to our awesome guests, Andy Anatko of WGBH, and as I said at the beginning of the show, Andy Anatko of Andy Anatko. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your work today.
Oh, thank you for another epic hosting job. Thank you very, very much, Micah. You're wonderful.
Thank you so much. And you got anything to pitch? If people want to get in touch with you, how can they do so?
As usual, spell my last name, which I got money that you can't do that, but you'll find me on Twitter and Instagram by my last name. I'm going to be on, as usual, Friday on Boston Public Radio, WGBH, talking about tech stuff from the Boston Public Library. We have an open studio there. Come on down and check it out. I believe I'm on at 11:30 in the morning this week, but if you check my Twitter on Thursday or Friday morning, I usually have the absolute specifics for you.
Excellent. And your left-hand pal there, Alex Lindsay of Pixel Core. Thank you so much, and we appreciate you being here with Renee out. Regardless of Renee's here or he's not here, we love to have you, and we think I'm glad you're here with us today.
It was good to be here.
Yeah.
And it would have been pretty rude if, like, you were, like, just here in the other room just, like, reading while we're doing, like, a Mac Break shorthanded. So maybe you were sort of, like, obligated at that point. Yeah,
exactly.
We're just talking about how, okay, I wish Alex here. Here you are, like, behind going to for the fridge for another scene.
Yes. That would have been perfect. Like, a little insert of me, like, putting my head in. Like, while Andy's talking, you just see me just put my head in going, hi. Yeah. Pull out.
That would be funny. That would have been funny.
And anything to pitch, or you want to tell us how people can get in touch with you?
Mostly on the Twitter, I'm on Instagram as well. If you want to see pictures of my trips, usually when I'm traveling, I'm taking pictures and throwing them up on Instagram. There's a bunch of stuff from India and Cambodia and stuff like that, and then I'm gonna put more up there, and then on Twitter I mostly say whatever I'm going to say. And sometimes it's good, sometimes bad. I just wrote, if you go up to Twitter, you'll see a link. I just wrote a couple articles, non-technical articles about live streaming on Medium. So if you want to check that out, you can find it on Medium under me, or you can find the links directly on Twitter. And it's just my name, Alex Lindsay.
Excellent. Coming to us from not as warm as Petaluma, California, but still pretty warm, Sacramento, California, it's the one and only Lori Gill. Lori Gill, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks again for having me.
Oh, of course. It is your show, frankly. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
I am the only regular on here right now, aren't I? Wow.
You are always...
Andy's regular.
I believe no, Andy, that's regular. Right. What? You know, I'm looking on at the best a screen of my days, with I'm Alex and it's throwing me off. So me and Andy, you're right. The two of us.
I find that Lori is often the... She tends to be the cornerstone. On the iMore podcast, there were times when other people were out, but Lori was always there. We appreciated that. Lori Gill, if people want to get in touch with you online, or if you have anything to pitch to us, including, don't forget, her AirPods Pro article comes out soon.
Yes. You can find me at Appaholic on Twitter. That's APPAHOLIK. And yeah, definitely check out iMore. We've got all kinds of great things going on. We've got reviews of Apple, of the TV Plus shows that are out. Ooh. My AirPods review should be up today or tomorrow at the latest. You know how it is.
Indeed. If you want to get in touch with me, by the way, remember, Leo Laporte is on vacation right now, probably on a boat, or as the chat was saying, maybe on a camel, who knows. But I am here in his place until he gets back. You can find me at Micah Sargent on most of the social things, or you can head to chihuahua.coffee, which, yes, is still the link, the place to find all the links to the different things that I do. Well, folks, it's time again to say, get back to work, because Mac Break is over.